Now, do it sound like I'm quiet to you? As loud as I'm hollering, you call me quiet?
Well, this is a report. We heard
from I'm hollering loud because I can back up every word. And I'll whoop any man in the world. And I want everybody out there on TV to know it. I am the greatest.
Chicago sports conversation is now The Beat on 720 WGN.
Yes, he was. The great Muhammad Ali. I'm Mark Harmon. He is Kevin Powell in for Adam Hogue today. Welcome to The Beat and 720 WGN. We are starting the show today with Muhammad Ali. We're going to talk to Rick Tellender of the Sun-Times at 3:35. Little Ali, and maybe throw some more people that knew Ali along the way. We're going to effort some Fred Mitchell, who visited him in Michigan, Al Bernstein, perhaps, and then we also have some baseball talk as well. Jeff Passan is going to be with us. Kevin, good afternoon. Good to see you.
I'm happy to be here, Mark Harmon. Always love hanging with you.
You're a little bit younger than me, and I'm young for Ali. So your thoughts on the greatest of all time?
An icon. As I tweeted this out last night, growing up, I had a Muhammad Ali poster on my bedroom wall.
I mean, how amazing is that?
Right? And I obviously, well before my time. I mean, he boxed at his prime 20, 25 years before I was even born. But it's still, I think it's the same way a Michael Jordan would probably still resonate with kids today. They see the 23, they see the Jumpman logo, they know who he is, they know about him. That's sort of the same vibe with Ali. Ali, obviously a lot different than Jordan in terms of social issues, and you talked about it with John with the Vietnam War and all those sorts of things, but you just still just can feel the presence and you know about them growing up.
Yeah, he is... I mean, I'm going the most riveting sports figure of the 20th century, and I don't really... I mean, you could talk about people like Jackie Robinson, who broke the color barrier, maybe the most important thing. You know, that was... You know, Muhammad Ali didn't do anything like that for boxing, but a professional athlete, a black man, in the 1960s, speaking out, being braggadocious, saying, I'm not going to war, no Viet Cong ever called me N... Right. And in the middle of his career, stripped from and was despised by many at the time.
Yeah.
Who is this outspoken African American guy who is converting to Islam, going from Cassius Clay to Muhammad Ali, and it's telling you that he's the greatest? And that was, I mean, people did not know what to do with him back then. And there was a lot of people who hated him. Maybe the most beloved athlete of all time. And if you want to, your thoughts on Muhammad Ali, if you wanted to celebrate him today, we'd love to hear from you. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. I mean, I think that our audience at WGN, he had to have resonated. I mean, he's resonating Absolutely. Everywhere, but, you know, especially here, you know, iconic radio station. People, you know, a little bit of an older demographic at times here. I feel like he couldn't have resonated more with you know, people listening right now.
Well, and the Tribune has a good write-up about how much time he spent here in Chicago, a majority of that on the South Side. He basically for a decade. I mean, he had a home in Kenwood, two blocks from the Nation of Islam leader Elijah Muhammad. So he spent a lot of time here in Chicago, so there's roots there, but... Yeah, just an icon. I don't get starstruck, really, Carm. I think you're probably the same way, right? I mean, you're around athletes a lot, and celebrities sometimes here at the radio station. But if I were to ever have met Muhammad Ali, I mean, my jaw would have been on the floor.
I mean, when you walked in the studio today, I got a little starstruck.
You did have a big smile on your face.
I was...
And then you told me I looked ill or something, and that kind of...
You looked a little tired, but then you just perked up nicely.
I've got my Starbucks.
But yeah, no, I used to... When I first started in the business, I was talking about getting starstruck. I would do that with Michael, I mean, for sure. Right. First time being in the locker room, there's Michael Jordan, who I, you know, they had 17,000 posters of and all that. Muhammad Ali would absolutely be that. But you would also, like, feel... I think, you know, if you were in a room with Muhammad Ali... You would feel comfortable that he would be kind to you, mm-hmm. and that he, you know, Michael was always kind of sort of competitive with the media. If you asked him a question that he didn't like, he was going to shoot you down, which he did to me many times, which was always uncomfortable and disappointing because I really just wanted to be his friend. Can't we be friends? I love you. You're Michael Jordan.
Well, you can't ask him that when you're on the beat, Carm.
Well, correct. I was certainly battling being professional when I was around Mike, but like Muhammad, I look, there's a part of him that is so out there and outspoken and has, you know, the core beliefs and holding to it that I just, you know, I think so many people go through life being, I don't want to use the word fake, but not being truly authentic. And I think it's a challenge for all of us to be honest and to be who we are and to not compromise. And that was him. And he went from being a so-called, you know, draft dodger to be welcomed by basically every single president. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's pictures with him with Jimmy Carter and Ronald Reagan and George Bush and Bill Clinton.
Well, Bill Clinton's going to be at his funeral Friday. He'll be there. I love this clip, though. I was reading an article about him earlier. It says, born Cassius Marcellus Clay on January 17th, 1942 in Louisville, Kentucky, Ali began boxing at age 12 after his bicycle was stolen, and he vowed to police officer Joe Martin that he would whoop the person who took it.
That's the best, right?
12-year-old Muhammad Ali.
And apparently they weighed like 89 pounds at that time.
And that's how it all started for him. Don't steal his bike.
You know, and there was a... Listen, I've seen different people interviewed about when he lost to Joe Frazier when he came back after, you know, 3.5 years being banned from boxing because he wouldn't fight in Vietnam. And he lost to Joe Frazier in the first bat.
Right.
Bryant Gumbel, who's who I'm thinking of. I mean, he talked about it on HBO Real Sports. He cried that night when he lost because what he represented at that time, an outspoken black man who was, you know, he just represented so many people who were trying to fight the good fight, and he lost to Joe Frazier, who he called an Uncle Tom, which was, I mean, completely unfair and all that.
He called him too ugly to be a champion.
Too ugly to be a champion. It's going to be, you know, when I get the gorilla in Manila, maybe the greatest boxing match of all time, mm-hmm. which might have cost him years on his life. I wish that I was alive during
his prime. Absolutely, yeah. There was an estimated 29,000 punches he took in his career. I don't know how that estimation came about, but a rough estimate. But 29,000, and obviously it you saw it throughout his year with Parkinson's and all that. But you know, towards the end of his life here, anytime he was at a sporting event,
1996 Olympics.
Standing ovation every time.
Every single time.
I mean, it was just incredible to watch.
312-981-7200 if you want to celebrate Muhammad Ali. There's a quote in the Tribune from George Foreman on him. I don't call him the best boxer of all time, but he's the greatest human being I've ever met.
Wow.
I mean, it's quite a statement from somebody who, in one of the great boxing matches of all time, lost to Muhammad Ali, right, in the... Which was the Foreman fight, as I get my Muhammad Ali knowledge mixed up here. The thrill in Manila was Frazier, and then you had the Foreman fight in 1974. So, regard the Rumble in the Jungle. Thank you, Dan Long. Appreciate you. By the way, I've got a question. I got a question for you on Danny Long in a little bit here.
Mount Rushmore of sports icons. You got to go Ali, Jordan, Gretzky, Ruth, Juan Uribe.
No, that's fair. That's fair.
I think four, right?
Well, and the thing with when you throw Michael in there, I don't feel like Michael deserves to be on the same level of him because Michael never spoke out about anything.
I think that's sort of two different. But I'm just talking in sports in general, right? I mean, is any athlete even close to Muhammad Ali then? I'm just saying
Jackie Robinson.
In terms of their. Jackie Robinson. Okay.
That's about it, though.
Yeah.
I mean, and Jackie, I mean, he broke the color barrier, but he was told, hey, keep quiet. Don't react. So, I mean, Muhammad Ali's out there saying, I ain't fighting in Vietnam. No, that's an enormous stance. He's walking with Malcolm X.
Right.
I mean,
in crosstalk with John, I think he hit it on the head saying, stick to your principles.
Right.
You know, stick to your guns. And Ali did. He never wavered in anything. I mean, he stuck to his beliefs.
I asked my brother's 20 years older than me, huge Ali fan. I asked him his thoughts on it. He writes to me, he's the greatest boxer in the history of the heavyweight division by far. He had the fastest hands, fastest feet, and was the only heavyweight who moved like a welterweight and rarely got hit in his prime.
I'm glad you brought that up because GIFs, I think GIFs were created and exist because of Muhammad Ali, because all over social media there's been GIFs of little Ali dancing, his footwork, his glove work, and they're just little short clips, but you can watch them over and over because it's just incredible. Yeah. I mean, his footwork was amazing. I watch highlights of it all day.
Love a good Ali dance. He was also endlessly entertaining. Brother Dave continues on, nobody like him. A boxer, an entertainer, a political activist, a world ambassador. And then he continues with Jackie Robinson did more good by breaking the color line in baseball, but Ali was the man. 312-981-7200. You want to celebrate Muhammad? We're going to talk to Rick Tellender at 3:35. It's the beat. Kevin Powell in for Adam Hoge. I'm Mark Carmen at 720 WGN. I was so excited for this song.
It's a jam.
It's a great tune, isn't it? We can go more.
Before.
Give a little more, Danny.
The black Superman who calls to the other guy, Ali. Catch me if you can.
Love him.
There it is. Who is this?
I just know the song is Black Superman.
Love it.
312-981-7200. We're celebrating the greatest of all time, Muhammad Ali, on the beat. I'm Mark Carmen. He's Kevin Powell. We should mention the White Sox closing in on James Shields, which doesn't help their bullpen, but should help their starting rotation.
They needed to add a pitcher. They needed two starting pitchers. This will help shore up the back end of this rotation. It sounds like none of the major top prospects will be dealt, but there's been talks about maybe Eric Johnson, the righty pitcher. Sox will probably eat about half of his remaining $58 million he's due through 2018.
Well, right. The more money you take on, the more you're going to give away in a prospect. The Cubs were in on James Shields to sign him, and San Diego overpaid for him, and now they're dealing him. So that's one of those fortunate moments where you tried to get somebody, you drew the line, and already the Padres moving him. Let's get back to Muhammad and your thoughts on the greatest of all time. Jerry, welcome to 720 WGN. What's on your mind, sir?
Well, I want to say that I'm not quite sure he was the greatest. I think some people would contend that Tyson would have beaten him. He was not always the media darling, draft dodger. I don't think the Vietnam vets have a lot of support for him. Name caller, he would call people monkey, ugly, big gorilla.
Mm-hmm.
Self-promoter.
Mm-hmm.
Sounds like Donald Trump.
So you're comparing Muhammad Ali to Donald Trump. How do you...
Wait a minute. Do you think they have more in common or more difference?
I would say they have more difference, would be
is,
my take.
Is not Trump a successful businessman?
He's also an idiot. Muhammad Ali wasn't.
I mean, how many businesses has Donald Trump had that's gone bankrupt, Jerry?
I think my point being is that he was not always the media darling that you guys are presenting.
Carmen
was a draft dodger.
Well, Carmen said that right off the top. Dodger. He said that right off the top that he wasn't widely liked in his prime. He really wasn't.
Jerry, so you didn't like him back then? Am I hearing you correctly here?
I had a big problem with his being a draft dodger.
Mm-hmm.
I think some people would consider him anti-American at that time. A self-promoter. A great boxer? Absolutely. The greatest boxer ever? No one could judge that. I think people would say that Tyson would have certainly given him. He was a self-promoter. I'm not going to diminish his success as a boxer, but let's not forget the downside of Cassius Clay, a.k.a. Muhammad Ali. That was a draft dodger.
We've mentioned it many times, Jerry. So you feel the same way about him today that you did back then?
I don't forget some of the other attributes.
Did you fight in Vietnam, Jerry?
too young. Did you?
No, I did not.
What does that got to do with it?
Well, I think a lot of people. I think a lot of people believe we should never have been in the Vietnam War, and a lot of people lost their lives being in the Vietnam War, and we shouldn't have been there. So I think
asking me if I fought in the Vietnam.
Well, I'm trying to get some context as to why it bothers you so much.
Doesn't bother me so much. I'm just saying. My initial point was I think he has more in common with Donald Trump than he has apart from him.
Okay. All right, Jerry. I appreciate the call. Thank you, brother. We appreciate the call, I should say. I'm not willing to go into the That's the second time I've heard that. Donald Trump, Muhammad Ali. I mean, Muhammad Ali's like rolling over in his grave right now hearing that phone call. But that's cool. I mean, listen, that's the point here. A lot of people still are bothered by the outspokenness. And, I mean, listen, my brother was alive during Vietnam. He was born in 1953. He was in line. He got a low draft number, and he did not want to fight. And a lot of people didn't because it was a ridiculous war. I don't think anybody would argue with that. That's not to take anything away from everybody who did tremendous service and all that. Can we boil that? You all right over there, pal?
That phone call from Jerry. I appreciate the call. Appreciate Jerry listening.
Thanks, Jerry. 312-981-7200. Cedric, you're on 720 WGN. Go ahead, Cedric.
Hello. Hi. How are you doing? Thanks for having me. I just wanted to comment on, back in 1969, I was working at the First National Bank, and I saw this crowd coming down the street, and I didn't know what it was. I was on a lunch break, and as I got closer, I saw Muhammad Ali. He was above the crowd, and as I got closer to him, I kind of see, you know, sometimes you can feel a person's presence, and I saw him, and he impressed me as a person who you just really wanted to meet. And from following him throughout the history of his life, I kind of understand the ups and downs about what he represented, how, you know, his beliefs. I understand all the, you know, the braggadocio and all that was a part of the process, you know. But he did stand for things, and he stood for them sincerely. You didn't have to wonder about whether he really believed in the things that he said. And, you know, I just heard the comment from the, you know, the guy who I think his name was Jerry. I think sometimes what we do is we kind of think too much about an incident or something that, you know, we don't like about a person when we don't really even know the person. We're not in their shoes. I think he's kind of a little misguided when he talks about comparing him to Donald Trump. You know, it's there's nothing in the world that's more ridiculous than that to me. And I also had a comment about, you know, what one of the hosts said about Michael Jordan.
Mm-hmm. That was me.
He said Michael Jordan hadn't really spoken out about anything, but what he needed to know is that Michael Jordan has supported a lot of boys and girls clubs here in Chicago, and I'm not sure if anywhere else. But sometimes, because we're not in the media speaking about things, doesn't mean that we don't do anything in the background, you know, to help people. And I just wanted to say that, okay? But I appreciate your show. I like it a lot, and I listen to it often.
Thank you, Cedric. And listen, I'm well aware that Michael's given a ton of money to charity, and he recently did win his lawsuit with Dominic's. He donated all that dough. I'm talking about speaking out.
Right.
And I'm the biggest Michael fan you'll ever find. I'm sorry. You can't put Muhammad Ali and Jordan in the same breath as far as civil activists. Come on.
A listener chiming in via the text line says, I was 4 or 5 years old growing up in the South Shore. Ali, known then as Cassius Clay, lived down the street, and I would see him running backwards and ghost boxing and spinning around the park. My father had told me who and what he was, a memory I have to this day. That's pretty cool. There's probably a lot of people here in town that have memories like that.
Just like they do for Donald Trump.
Right.
312-981-7200. Let's get into the newsroom. We'll take more of your calls afterwards. 312-981-7200. Also going to talk to Rick Tellender from the Chicago Sun-Times.
Surprised you're listening to The Beat?
No, I'm not surprised at anything. I don't want to answer any questions like that.
Chicago Sports Spoken here.
Tuesday.
This is The Beat on 720 WGN.
720 WGN, Mark Harmon, he's Kevin Powell. We're talking about Muhammad Ali. Going to have Rick Tellender from the Chicago Sun-Times on in about 5 minutes here. David Haw is a phenomenal piece in the Tribune, which I am reading currently right now. I've got my paper Tribune in front of me, and I'm reading Haw online, who interviewed Ali 20 years ago,
wow.
a young David Haw in a room with Muhammad Ali, and he writes being super nervous and Ali making him feel comfortable.
Wow.
I am offended that we had one caller call in and compared him to Donald Trump, but I'm moving past that, Kevin.
I know.
He was a draft dodger. He's like Donald Trump. There's a okay. Well, let's just move along. Before we get to Talander, let's talk to you, 312-981-7200. I mean, my favorite thing about Ali, not only is he ridiculously entertaining, but no one has ever spoken out about issues like he has and put himself in the crossfire and stuck to his guns and was authentic. And that's something that all of us should be shooting for. Frank, you're on 720 WGN. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm on the line.
You are, Frank.
Oh, great. Thanks for taking my call. Guys, that call from Jerry just really upset me. I want to make it a point to say Muhammad Ali, for me, was a great person because he wasn't a draft dodger. He took a stance against the government and what they were doing and trying to help out his fellow brothers that were dying at a war that nobody really wanted to be in. You know, when he gave up, when he took that stance, he didn't get anything in return. He gave everything. His championship, his right to box, his right to make a living. And you know what? And for Jerry to compare him to Trump or even call him a draft dodger and call him Cassius Clay is insulting.
Agreed, Frank, and appreciate that you felt the urge to call in. And but we're celebrating him here today, Frank. But that doesn't mean that everybody's going to. And listen, we're not going to – if you want to say something negative, we'll put you on the air. But thanks for the call, Frank.
All right, thank you.
Thanks, Frank.
You got it.
Yeah, Jerry's hot take got the crowd riled up a little bit, Carl.
Yeah, it did. Well, and it should because, listen, I mean, you're talking about one of the most authentic, I'm using that word a lot, athletes of all time. And that was a great point by Frank right there. He gave up his living. He gave up his right to do the most favorite thing.
He wasn't cowarding from the Vietnam War. He was taking a stand.
Right. That was a great way of putting it. And it was a stance, by the way, that many, 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 many people had at the time.
Right. And when you have the floor that he does and the attention he does and you can make some noise about it, and he stuck to his guns, and he did.
It's also a fascinating time in American history. I mean, it really is.
Yeah.
You're talking about the 60s, and you're talking about the Vietnam War, and you're talking about somebody like Muhammad Ali who did not exist at that point. I highly recommend David Haw's article in the Tribune, by the way. Mike, you watch The Thrill in Manila on tape, Mike?
I had the privilege of doing a lot of work at the Ali Estate in Berrien Springs, Michigan about 20 years ago. And all he wanted to do was play. There would be six or eight kids outside his stone gate that had G-O-A-T on it. And if a kid was ringing the phone, he'd come out personally and hang out with them. And I saw that many times. And when I would spend time out there in a maintenance role of type, all he wanted to do was go work out or go hang out. He had this gym that was a perfect square building and it had a ring inside of it and universal weights all the way around it. And on the walls, all the way around these four walls were pictures of him with Malcolm X and him with Michael Jordan, him with the Beatles and him with Ed Sullivan. And you're looking at it and go, wow, this is that dude right here, right now. Wow. One of the most, and there's a lot of things I can't talk about on the radio, but I'll give
Come
you
Come on, I'll fire away. Fire away, Mike.
I can't, man.
Mike, no one's listening. It's just me, you, and Kevin.
But one of the things we got to do was, because of his beliefs, he didn't have a TV in the house, wink, wink. But if we pulled the curtain back, we could watch, he liked Jerry Springer a lot. And we did get to watch The Thrill in Manila more than once. It was amazing.
Did he give commentary throughout it? I mean, what were his thoughts sitting there watching with him?
Yeah, and I'm going to, you know, out of reverence, I'm not going to get too descriptive at all. But he did tell me what he did tell Sonny Liston when he had him down on the mat. You know, he's got that right where he's got his right.
Yeah, the
arm.
Iconic photo, Doc. Absolutely.
Yeah, well, there's a full. Life-size statue of that in this arena room that we were talking. And so you see that and you just forget that here's what happens when you're with him. He's so kind that you don't feel like you're with anybody that could do these things that made him famous. You follow me?
Yep. Gotcha. 100%, man. How did you get in there again, Mike? How did you become an employee, basically, right? I'm hearing this right?
Well, yeah. Basically, I sold floor cleaners, okay? And as he was progressing through his Parkinson's, and it was affecting his walk, they needed a type of a floor cleaner and wax that wouldn't be slippery for him. And, you know, you go out there and you try this one, you try that one. Next thing you know, you're eating dinner with him. And Lonnie's just a saint. I mean, that lady, I can't make the noise, but imagine if you're in a crowd of 100 people and everybody's calling your name, Ali or Champ or this or that. And all she had to do was make this clicking sound, like very loud, though. Like some people can make that noise very loud. She can. Uh-huh. He stopped and looked for her. At that point in time, he knew that she needed him right now to pay attention for whatever it was. One time we were working out, and she came in and made that noise, and he looked at me and he said, "You got to go." Yeah, I just left. He was in trouble for something.
Oh. But,
you know, he would wander off and not tell her where she, and this is before cell phones. Everybody had them at their hips. You know, it was 15, 18 years ago. And it was an amazing experience. I'll never forget. I do need to repeat some of the stories from time to time so that I don't forget them.
Yeah.
But there are some amazing. I got a few that would just. A couple took place in Chicago. One was in Detroit. I was able to sit next to him and just come up with names, and I would say Howard Cosell, and he would talk about Howard Cosell. Joe Frazier, and he would comment on Joe Frazier. It was amazing. While I was there one time, Shaquille showed up. You know, just. One of those things that you're pinching yourself while it's happening.
What do you say about Joe Frazier?
Off the air.
Okay, we have a text line, and I'll just say it with somebody else. 312-981-7200. Hey, Mike, thanks for sharing,
great
man.
Great stuff, Mike. Thank you.
All right, man. You got it, man. Take care.
Let's bring in Rick Tellender from the Chicago Sun-Times, who had his own encounters with Muhammad Ali, who's, by the way, in talking to us from... I hope I'm not sharing too much here, Rick. You just had back surgery. You're in the hospital, and you're on 720 WGN. This is yeoman's duty for you.
Battling through.
Yeah. Hey, no problem, you know. Get loaded up on drugs and talk to anybody. It's just repairing some stuff that's been about 40 years in the making. So, hey, no big deal. Had surgery yesterday. Up and walking around, I'm bopping around. It's all good.
So this is a Northwestern Wildcat injury. What are we talking here? Is it when I was?
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I'll blame them, and I'd like to sue them. I think you know, they got a lot of money.
No cats.
But you know, whatever. Well, stuff happens. But yeah, it started in football. But you know, honestly, it was 44 years ago that I first had it diagnosed. You know, these degenerative discs and bulging discs. Everybody ends up with it. So. Hey, got it fixed, like changing a tire on a car.
All right. Well, you're back and better than ever. When's the first time you ever met Muhammad Ali, Rick?
You know, I was trying to think of that. I would see him in the oddest of places. Of course, I'd see him in airports. A lot of people would, because he was traveling quite a bit. One of the first times was down on a riverboat or a houseboat on Biscayne Bay, of all places. They were having an amateur boxing match there outside of Miami, and this had to be, God, it was a long time ago, and for whatever reason Muhammad Ali showed up. So nobody's watching the guys boxing in the ring. He's walking through the crowd, which wasn't huge, you know, maybe 1,000 people tops, and just talking to everybody. And so it's almost like the guys fighting in the ring wanted to stop too, so they could come out and talk to him. That's the kind of guy he was. I think you're probably hearing that from a lot of people. I saw him in Cleveland. I know I saw him. He came to a Bulls game. This would have been back like probably in 1993, maybe something like that, before Jordan retired, I want to say. You just run into him in random places because he didn't shy away from the public, which was, you know, guys don't do that anymore. And the times I saw him, he didn't have an entourage. And the times I saw him, he also wasn't afflicted with the Parkinson's syndrome, which, you know, I want to make one point about that. Everybody knows how that disease progressed, but it actually is Parkinson's syndrome, meaning that it was caused by boxing. It is not, as some people like Michael J. Fox can get it from other defects, you know, other things going on that that might cause it. Yeah. With his, it was actually caused by blows to the head. And so every time I think of this guy, I think of – it's very sad to me because he was such a charismatic person globally. I wish he hadn't been a boxer. I certainly wish he would have quit 30 matches before when he did, because what he did to himself ultimately was self-inflicted from the sport that he chose. And that's just kind of sad because, man, he had to live inside of himself for, I want to say, I don't know how long, the last 20, 25 years, he hasn't really been able to communicate.
I think he was diagnosed in 1994. I'll double check that, but that's a long time. Yeah.
And we mentioned this earlier, Rick. They estimated he took 29,000 blows to the head throughout his career. Yeah. So obviously,
and you know what he did when he was getting hit, he acted as though it didn't hurt. Mm-hmm. You know, the rope-a-dope was his famous thing, and then of course he'd clown around and he'd look out and shake his head and make his eyes real wide, like it didn't hurt. And I knew it was kind of frustrating to me as I watched, because I knew he wasn't superhuman, and I knew what these blows were doing to you know, Jerry Quarry and Joe Frazier and Ken Norton and everybody else, and I knew they were doing it to him too. Your brain is not, nobody's brain is protected from blows to the head, and when you get the essence of boxing is getting a concussion. You know, a knockout is the greatest thing you can do. There were times, I guarantee you, when he was essentially knocked out, but he was so courageous and brave and so stubborn that he wouldn't go down. So you just get more and more of those blows. And, you know, I don't think there's anybody on the planet that really wants a kid to go into boxing.
Rick, is there an athlete you covered or encountered throughout your career that comes close to Muhammad Ali in terms of success in competition, but also in the way he impacted social issues?
Oh, when you throw that in there, that's very interesting. You know, Tiger Woods is famous. Joe Namath was obviously incredibly famous. Kobe Bryant, Michael Jordan. Jim Brown would probably be the only one. Babe Ruth was famous, but not having any kind of real social aspect to his fame. And so, I'd have to say, you know, it might be somebody like Pele. I know there's been a lot of guys who have done a lot of charitable work, but not taking a stand. And I think you have to be old enough to know what the Vietnam War was and how the world was changing back in the 60s to realize what he actually did. And, you know, when I saw him at the 96 Olympics, I was there and I saw him come out, you know, when he lit the flame, and everybody cheered. It was an awe-inspiring moment. But I knew that those same people, take them back to the 1960s, and they would have booed him tremendously. And what people liked about him ultimately was that he'd, in a sense, been emasculated. You know, this guy's no longer a threat to us. He's no longer scaring us. He's no longer a boxer. He's no longer that young, virile, African-American male. He's this nice, kindly guy with a smile when he can muster it, and he's harmless. He can't speak. He can't run. I mean, he can't do anything. And so that always troubled me. I always thought there was some hypocrisy in that, not for him, but in the way that he was treated by the world. We all love Muhammad Ali right now, the greatest and all that. But trust me, back in the 60s, even the 70s, no way, none at all.
Yeah, no, and we had one guy call in today who compared him to Donald Trump because he was a draft dodger, and he said, like, draft dodger five times on the air, so he's still holding it. I mean, there's people.
Yeah, well, he went to prison, so at least he had some gumption behind what he did.
Right. And when you think of him in relation to Jackie Robinson, Rick, what would you say?
Well, okay, that's a good one. Jackie Robinson, what he did in baseball was – actually, by playing the game, he didn't have to do anything else. Him simply playing the game was enough. You know, that was just hugely important to society. So, yes, I'll grant you that. But Ali, there had been tons of boxers and lots of black boxers, but there had not been anybody like him. There had not been anybody. He was just a, you know, I heard whoever was speaking before say, how could this incredibly nice, generous, thoughtful man do what he did in the ring? And you know, that was kind of the mystery of it all, because he was a really, really caring, giving guy. I think we kind of went through this a little bit with Prince recently. People thought, well, back in the day, he was just a wacko, a weirdo, you know, and it's sad that he died the way he did. But Prince did a lot of good things besides his music. And, you know, it takes time to put all these people's into their place in the world and what they mean and what they meant. But, yeah, that's a good point, Jackie Robinson. And, you know, I'm sure there's others.
Jesse Owens, texter, pointed out. Could be in the same conversation.
Jesse, yeah, I mean, yes, Jesse, absolutely. But, again, he was good enough to be on, you know, the Olympic team and to make this point to Nazi Germany. Mm-hmm. But I'm not sure he set out to actually do that.
Right.
And don't forget, Ali did go to prison over his beliefs. You know, we may not like the black Muslims or anything like that, but this was not just some idle threat. If you're going to compare him to, you know, Donald Trump, well, you know, he didn't go to prison. And whoever that caller was, it's just saying draft dodger, draft dodger.
Yeah,
it's true, but at least Ali took his lumps for it.
Right. He lost his income. He lost doing what he loves to do. I mean, as we've said, he took a stand. Rick, appreciate the time, sir, and we wish you a speedy recovery. I expect to see you on the hoop. I expect to see you on the hoop court very soon. As
I think they put in like one of those springs, one of those coils in there. I think I got another 6 inches on my vertical.
Yeah. Whenever Rick's on the line, I feel the need to mention that when I was 16 years old, it was playing in a multiplex, which is now defunct, basketball league. It was Rick Tolliter and I were on the same team, and Rick would just bury baseline jumpers and just barrel his way through the lane too whenever he felt the urge. Is that about?
I don't know, Mark. I'm probably a football player playing basketball, but you, my friend, were the shooter.
Oh,
and the dribbler.
I'll grant myself the dribble, but the shooting was incredibly erratic. There's a word.
Well, I meant you put them up.
I did. I absolutely did do that. Rick, thanks for the time, my friend.
Thank you, Rick.
My pleasure. See you guys.
That's Rick Tolliter of the Chicago Sun-Times from his hospital bed, getting better. We got to take a quick timeout. More Muhammad Ali talk to come, and we'll get into some baseball as well. Cubs are leading the Diamondbacks 5-3 in the eighth, 720 WGN.
Deep center. Way back. Bourne can't get it. Two more runs will score. 5-0, and that ball ends up out of play. And Baez will be allowed to score as well. 6-0.
Look at this. Get over his head. It will. So bad we'll meet it off. Get in there. With a double. First,
he just barely got into second base, and that ball went to the wall. And the dugout is going crazy.
The Matt Albers double.
Like a cat.
How can you be a professional baseball player or professional athlete and be that fat, for lack of putting it in a better way?
When I ran into him in spring training, I was like, who is that? It gives me hope.
Northside, Southside report on 720 WGN, sponsored by Vienna Beef. Big White Sox news today, Kevin Powell.
All right, well, it sounds like this is a complete done deal. According to Bob Nightingale, the White Sox are sending pitcher Eric Johnson and Fernando Tatis Jr., a shortstop prospect, to the Padres for James Shields. Still working out all the details, but it sounds like it is a done deal. The White Sox will add Shields to the rotation, which the back end of it has been really uneasy this season between Matt Latos and the fifth spot, which has been Eric Johnson, Miguel Gonzalez. So this will help. This will help. He look at his numbers here. He's 2-7 this year with a 4.28 ERA. Now keep in mind, his ERA was at 3 before his last start, which he was completely torched. Gave up 10 runs in 2 2/3. His ERA ballooned over a point. He also hasn't had much run support. The Padres have scored 22 runs in James Shields' 11 starts. In comparison, the Sox have scored 32 runs in Jose Quintana's, and we all know how little amount of run support he gets. So keep that in mind. Don't really look at the record. It sounds like the Sox will probably have to eat about half of his contract, which is a good thing. I mean, they needed to do this. They needed at least one starting pitcher.
I still think they need a second one if they're actually going to be contenders down the road. But this is what they needed to do. They needed a starting pitcher. So if they're going to stay in contention and they're serious and they actually think they can win a championship, you have to make moves like this.
We'll talk more about the Shields move later in the show. Right now, the White Sox and Tigers 1-1, bottom of two. Chris Sale is on the mound for the Sox, and the Cubs are leading the Diamondbacks 5-3, bottom of eight. We'll do a little Cubs post coming up. After the news, I sat down with Craig Sager at Wrigley Field earlier this week. He was singing the seventh inning stretch. Sager battling cancer and is not going to be with us very long. That tone means we're super late for news, though. But you want to stick around for the Sager.
It's a great interview, really.
It was really the local
guy. Grew up here in Chicago.
Yep, Batavia, Northwestern. He was Willie the Wildcat. So we'll do that right after 4 o'clock, 720 WGN.
Chicago Sports, spoken here. The Beat is on.
720 WGN and WGNradio.com.
720 WGN, I'm Mark Carmen. He's Kevin Powell. Adam Hogoff today. We'll check in with Adam, who is in the midst of his move. He's got movers.
Moving's the worst.
He was going to do it himself. We had a whole...
Oh, he did hire movers?
He did.
That's a clutch move.
I mean, we had an intervention on the show, like, dude, do not do this yourself. We're going to talk to Ira Burkow from the New York Times in about 10 minutes here, who has a intimate relationship with Muhammad Ali, very unique. So we'll get back to Ali in a second. But want to give some moments here, if you will, to Craig Sager, who's been battling cancer and has been given 3 to 6 months to live and has been taking blood transfusions and chemo and, you know, hashtag let's hope that he beats it. But I think he's well aware of, you know, the odds that he's up against. And here he was at Wrigley Field on Wednesday night singing the seventh inning stretch. I mean, wearing the white suit, the blue Cub tie. He's walking up the ramp.
Mm-hmm. I mean, he was all over the place. I was there at night. I saw him kind of walking around the media area, saying hi to everyone, smiling. Couldn't have been nicer.
And his son was there, Craig Sager Jr., who was, I mean, I was talking to him about his dad, and It was a tender time. I guess when he was done with the seventh inning stretch, he came out and wanted to get a beer, and the cutoff is in the seventh inning on night games 9:30. So they had just like closed off the taps, and so somebody saw him there who had like just gotten the last beer, and they're like, and he couldn't get one. They're like, Craig, here you go, and handed him.
Oh, that's great!
Isn't that awesome? Little Bud Light. So here, this was before the game. He was down in the field. I went up to him and said, "Craig, my name is Mark Carmen. I'm going to be with Kevin Powell on Saturday. I'd love to tape an interview with you." He said, "Absolutely." And here it is, me and Craig Sager. All right, with the great Craig Sager, who is looking as good as he always looks with the white suit, the blue shirt. What was the
Cubs tie?
And the Cubs tie. I mean, you look fantastic. Well, how did the genesis of what you wear come to be? Did somebody say, hey, Craig, dress flamboyantly, you'll get attention, your career will take off? I mean, how did it all come to be?
That wasn't like that. I grew up in Batavia out here, and it was a very boring town back when I was growing up there. It's a lot better now. And for our senior picture, you walked in and they had two blazers. It was a navy blazer and a black. Which one do you want to put on for your picture? And I thought that was boring, and so I was a big fan of the Monkees. By the way, it's their 50th anniversary today. It's a group. And I had a Nehru jacket like Davy Jones had or Mickey. And it had a big old collar and it's electric blue. And so I wore that for my picture. And they go, Sager, no, you got to wear one of these. I said, they said blue or black. And they go, yeah, and navy blue. I said, no, let's take it. And they go, they may not let you be in the yearbook. I said, well, I'll take my chances. You know, it's so small. I was in, you know, all the sports, National Honor Society speech and everything else. So they had to put my picture in the yearbook. So they printed it. Now even today when we go back for reunions, whatever, everybody's sitting there looking all the same. And they're even this electric blue shirt and the collar and the Nehru jacket. So it's just something I always like to do. I like to be lively. It's not so much for attention because I really am more comfortable. When I go play golf, you know, I don't want to be out there in gray and black. You know, I have loudmouth pants and wild colors, and some people say they don't match. And I go, well, they look like it did when I put them out of my room.
So you understood leverage at a young age there. Hey, they're going to have to put me in there. I deserve to be in the yearbook.
In Batavia, I worked for a little while, yeah. But then I worked at Kansas City, and, you know, they really didn't appreciate all the bright colors in the winter. And then CNN was starting out. I was employee 343. Now they have over 20,000. And they wanted me to tone down, and so they used to like put restrictions on what I could wear and all. So finally, when I got to the point where I was in the NBA and on the sidelines, and even David Stern put in that dress code for players. He put in one for me and told me he didn't want me to wear a lot of that stuff. And I was going through, and he was at a game that I didn't really know he was going to be there. And his wife was there, and he gave me this look like, oh, so you're going to take that off. And his wife goes, oh, Craig, you look so good. And commissioner goes, what are you saying? She goes, I think he looks great. Sports is supposed to be fun, and he looks great. And that was my breakthrough.
That's awesome. And I love that the wife trumped the former commissioner. That's a beautiful thing. How did you, I guess, what was your strategy in connecting with the athletes as well as you have? Because, I mean, everybody's been watching the playoffs, and so many guys have come up to you, and just so much heartfelt stuff. I mean, it really seems like they're not just doing a job talking to you, but they like being around you. What was your approach that way?
I think it's trust. I mean, we're partners. I'm not the investigator reporter that's going in there trying to stir up crap. I don't deal with negative things. I try to be positive. We're trying to promote these guys. They understand it. I've always been like that. When I was in Atlanta those early years, you know, my friends were the guys on the team. When I was in Kansas City, George Brett was one of my best friends. And Doc Rivers, Randy Whitman, Scott Hastings all played for the Hawks. And we opened a bar together, Jocks and Jills. It's still there, you know, since 1987. It's almost 30 years later. So I think they've seen me over the years, and I haven't burned bridges, and I haven't, you know, trashed people. And I'm always optimistic. You know, I don't say this guy's terrible, or I certainly wouldn't go on the air and say Oklahoma City choked. I wouldn't talk like that at all. You know, I just don't do negative reports.
Who do you like in the finals?
Well, Golden State coming out of the West, which was so much tougher this year, and with the best record in the history of the game, you would think they have the edge. But last year, you know, LeBron didn't have Kyrie Irving, and he didn't have a healthy Kevin Love. So they're going to be a formidable opponent. I'd love to see Cleveland win it, not only for LeBron, but more importantly for the city, just like I want to see the Cubs win, not only for the Cubs, but for the city of Chicago. But then again, if you're going to have the best record in the history of the game, you almost have to have a championship. You need that exclamation mark at the end, you know, to punctuate it. So I don't know who's going to win. I think Cleveland will win the, you know, first game for sure at home. I mean, on the road, they'll get, not going to win, but they'll put up a good fight because I think Golden State's tired after playing the seven games. So keep an eye on game one. Game one could determine it.
Craig Sager, I'll let you get back to your family in just one split second, but nobody signs up for this, yet you're an inspiration to so many right now, the way you're living. To see how you're connecting, people reaching out to you. I mean, what's that been like?
It's been amazing. You know, I realize now it's not about me. It's about what I represent. I'm fighting for everybody who's got cancer or been associated with it. Everybody knows somebody in their family who's been afflicted, or friends, relatives. It affects everybody. And I'm just out there to prove that, you know, don't let it affect how you live. Don't let it affect how you think. And in my case, I don't let affect my job. I just try to stay positive every day, and I try to do what I can. And if I have to go to the hospital twice a week like I do to get blood products and go in every 3 weeks to get 8 days of chemo, I'll do it. And I'm not going to let that bring me down. I'll be out of the hospital, and I'll be out of the treatments, and I'll have a great attitude and blessed to be around for every day. And hopefully we're going to find medical breakthroughs, and we're going to find a cure for this.
The former Willie the Wildcat. It's awesome to talk to you. Have a great time at the seventh inning stretch tonight. It's going to be awesome.
I'm excited.
So that was Craig Sager earlier this week at Wrigley Field, and he was a little wobbly walking, but he was putting on
trooper.
He was a complete trooper, putting on the bold face, and it was. I really enjoyed that.
It was a great interview up on the website WGNRadio.com. And I just want to drop this in, Carm. It is official. The White Sox have acquired right-handed pitcher James Shields and cash from the Padres for minor league infielder Fernando Tatis Jr., as well as starting pitcher Eric Johnson, who's been up and down from the bigs to the to the minor leagues for parts of the past couple seasons.
White Sox making moves. Cubs game has gone final. They beat the Diamondbacks 5-3. Ira Burkow, who was with Muhammad Ali, covering him back in the day, writer for the New York Times for over 20 years, is going to join us right after this quick timeout on 720 WGN. He's Kevin Powell. I'm Mark Carmen. This is The Beat. Adam Hogoff today. Ira Burkow wrote a book on Muhammad Ali called Counterpunch, and he has some unique experiences with the champ, the greatest of all time, and he joins us now on 720 WGN. Ira, appreciate you taking time today. I know you had a special relationship with Muhammad Ali. When you, yeah. What would you like to share at the start here? Because I really just want to give you the old dance
floor. Well, the book Counterpunch was published 2 years ago. It was a collection of my boxing columns, and there's a handful on Ali. He was a treat to be around. I mean, he was just full of life and full of he was like a he had a boyish quality to him. And you know, he did those magic tricks. He would do the same ones over and over again. I know that even when he was in grammar school, the people said he was the class clown. He liked attention to be showered on him, and as it turned out, it was deserved because he was a special human being. Not only in the ring, of course, but he had his convictions, and we all know that. He said, "I ain't got no quarrel with the Viet Cong," and he decided he wasn't going to go to Vietnam or to join the army that was fighting in Vietnam. Now, he would not have had the fight, of course. He would have had to just do exhibitions, boxing exhibitions, but there was a commitment to what was right or principled in his view, and it cost him 3.5 years of his prime, and. And then he came back in 1970. He was out in 67. Came back in 70, and his first fight was in Atlanta against Jerry Quarry, and I was there, and it was a remarkable event, and he TKO'd Quarry, and he cut him above the eye severely, and the fight was stopped. But Ali was back, and then the next fight. Or the next big fight was May 8th, 1971, and that was his first fight against Frazier, and first of three memorable fights. And what was phenomenal about this fight was that there were two undefeated heavyweight champions fighting for the first time. Ali had been out, and Frazier had assumed his title, and I was in the second row in the press row, and it was... every sports writer who covered that fight said it was the most thrilling sports event they'd ever attended, and I had to agree. These two great fighters, and all the hype was phenomenal, and the fight itself, which went 15 rounds, was greater than the hype, and the hype was fantastic. So, and then I got to know Ali in a lot of different ways and spent some time with him, and he was fun.
Ira, we were talking to Rick Talender of the Chicago Sun-Times about an hour ago, and he had a few run-ins with Muhammad, and he shares the same sentiment as you. It's just a joy to be around. But Rick brought up an interesting point, and he said he wished Muhammad Ali never boxed because he was obviously slowed and robbed of many years of life because of Parkinson's, because of the impact that boxing had on him physically. Did Muhammad ever share any or express those opinions or thoughts that he wished he maybe did something else? Because he still could have had an impact because of the guy he was.
Well, he felt that it was boxing that allowed him to be the iconic figure that he became, a worldwide figure, for good, for the most part. And, boxers go into the maybe the fighting boxing should be outlawed, but these are generally grown men. They know what the risks are or have some idea what the risks are, and they train. They go into the ring. But Ali felt that he estimated that he had taken something like 29,000 punches to the head, and he felt that it was just the right thing for him to do. He was proud of his achievements and accomplishments in the ring, and he felt those accomplishments allowed him to accomplish outside the ring. So I don't think he regretted a moment. He may have stayed too long in the ring. He may have had some regret about that, but I'm not sure about that. But regrets overall, I don't think so.
Longtime writer for the New York Times, Ira Berkow, also wrote the book Counterpunch. A lot of stuff on Muhammad in there with us here on 720 WGN. I know that we got texters writing in here, Ira, about the story about Muhammad, which is clean your room or I'll seal your doom. Can you share that?
Yeah. I was going to Chicago. Ali was training in Chicago for the Jimmy Ellis fight. I think it was 1972. And before coming to New York, I ran into a woman I knew, and I told her I was going to see Ali in Chicago. And she said, oh, she had two small boys. They were about 8 and 10. And she said, oh, my boys are such fans of Ali. Can you get an autograph for them? And I said, well, I can't get an autograph. I mean, I'm a professional journalist, and I'm interviewing somebody. I'm not going to ask for his autograph. Oh, please, she said. I said, well, if the occasion arises, I'll do it, but please don't count on it. So I went out, and I spent the day with Ali. And at the end of the day, we were sitting in the lobby of his hotel, and I said, champ, I hate to ask you this, but would you mind signing an autograph for two small boys? And he said, sure, no problem. So I gave him my pad, I gave him a pen, and he asked what their names were, and I said, told them what the names were, and I, for some reason, I said, their mother has trouble making them clean their room. So Ali wrote, to Timmy and Ricky from Muhammad Ali, clean that room or I will seal your doom.
That's amazing.
That's outstanding.
And it was just spontaneous, So, some people doubted that he wrote his own poetry. Well, you don't have a doubter here, I'm telling you.
Is it also true that you were on a flight with him and the stewardess was saying, you know, buckle your seatbelt, and he said,
Yeah. When we were on a flight, and the stewardess came by, and we're about to take off, and the stewardess said, Mr. Ali, you have to put your seatbelt on. And he said, Superman don't need no seatbelt. And she said, Superman don't need no airplane either.
That's awesome.
That's great.
So he was, I got to know him when he was in 1967 when he was exiled essentially from those, all the creeps in the boxing industry. Kept him out, and the state boxing authorities kept him out from boxing, and so I spent some time with him then, and he was always the same. He was always just so colorful,
in your opinion, is he the best boxer ever, or where does he rank?
No, you have to go by generations. Yeah. I reminded him of something that Joe Louis had said, and Ali had once said that he could beat Joe Louis in his prime, and Joe Louis said to him, I used to have a bum of the month club. Joe Louis would knock out a guy every month he would fight, and he said to Ali, I used to have a bum of the month club, and Ali said, well, I know about that, and Ali said, Louis said to Ali, you would have been one of the bums.
And what was Ali's reaction to that?
This was at a table in a suite in his hotel room, and he got, and this was near where he wasn't speaking too well, but he got up from the table after I reminded him of this. He got up from the table and he started doing the Ali shuffle, and he said Louis would come in this slow, ponderous way, and I'm dancing all over the place. He couldn't retouch me. And that was his reaction to Louis.
Did he ever express regret to you, Ira, about calling Joe Frazier and Uncle Tom and the way he, Gorilla and Manila and all that stuff?
Yeah, no, I resented that. I thought that was terrible. But not in my presence. When Ali was down and out of boxing, Frazier loaned him money.
Is that right?
And,
huh?
Yeah. Frazier loaned him money, and then Frazier was very hurt by Ali's remarks, you know, about how I'm so beautiful and he's the gorilla, you know, and Frazier was a lovely man, just straightforward. He had none of the kind of, you know, creative imagination that Ali had. He was just a totally different type, but a real fine guy, real fine guy, and as was Ali.
Ira, great stuff, and okay. I'd love to talk to you for another hour.
Yeah.
But
we'll listen to those stories all day. Thank you very much, Ira.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Ira Burkow, who spent a lot of time with Muhammad Ali.
Envious he got to spend time with him.
Right?
I mean, I feel like one day with him would have been enough stories for a lifetime.
You could just hear the joy of that experience just coming right through the old radio there. Ira having a unique experience with Muhammad Ali. All right, we got to get into news. Quick timeout, 720 WGN.
Why? Chicago sports spoken here.
Where the sports is it going on?
This is The Beat.
WGN. He's Kevin Powell. I'm Mark Carmen. With you till 7 o'clock tonight on The Beat. Jeff Paston is the lead baseball columnist for Yahoo Sports. Be with us a couple of minutes here. Recapping the baseball action of today. Cubs beat the Diamondbacks 5-3. So Jason Hamill, 7 innings, 1 hit, let that sink in, 7 innings, 1 hit, couple of runs, they were earned. His ERA falls to 2.14, which is preposterous. And then you had Strope out of the bullpen, who went 2/3 of an inning, gave up 3 hits and a run. Cahill comes on, faces one batter, walks him. Then Travis Will with the bases loaded gets an out. His ERA is 2.61, and then Rondon for his 10th save. Rondon lowers his ERA on a perfect ninth inning to .98. And the Chicago Cubs are now 39-15, 22-7 at home. And, Kevin, you do a bunch of baseball coverage for 720 WGN. I guess you already have your travel plans for the World Series, because this is coming, and it's coming quick.
It's obviously, we say this every season, no matter what the team, it's health. If they stay healthy, if the pitching staff stays healthy. Jason Hamill, though, for me, as good as he's been, if you look throughout his career, he always falls apart in the second half of a season. And he talked about this a lot. He's adopted some of the workout methods that Jake Arrieta uses, the Pilates and some of those things. And he said he really reevaluated how he goes about preparing for a season this past off season he did. So it seems to be obviously paying off for him in the early going here. Now, Jed Hoyer, general manager for the Cubs, has already said they're going to be eyeing pitching. You can't have enough good pitching. So the Cubs, whether they add a starting pitcher or bullpen help, a veteran bullpen guy, something like that, it's still, I don't think you can have too many good pitchers. So my point is, Jason Hamill is a guy you're going to have to keep an eye on in the second half, and you can't wait too long and not get somebody at the deadline. And then Hamill does sort of, you know, fall apart a little bit towards the end of the season or waver a little bit. And Kyle Hendricks, he's been great, but he still doesn't have a ton of a long track record. So you're not exactly sure what he's going to do for a full length of a season either. So my point is, Jed Hoyer, they're still going to be adding a pitcher or two. That's the only thing I could really say they need is just pitching help.
A couple of lefties that the Yankees have in the back end of their bullpen are Aroldis Chapman, who used to be a Red and has had some issues off the field that maybe makes him less attractive, and Andrew Miller, who has a friendly contract for a couple of years. Those are two guys that I think the Cubs are highly interested in. Miller's been phenomenal. 22 games this year, 21 2/3 innings, 13 hits. He's got an ERA of 1.25, and Chapman's been very good as well. I think the back end of the bullpen is where you're looking more than anywhere else. Hamill's start yesterday, or today rather, was a big deal just because he left his last start with leg issues, which he had last year, and then he fell off the map.
Yeah, it sounds like it was just cramping from the other start.
Right.
But he comes back with a great start today.
But he, you know, after the game after the cramp, he's like, well, we think it was cramping.
Yeah.
We'll see tomorrow. He wasn't real definitive on it. I'm like, well, what is it, dude?
Yeah.
Because if it's not a cramp, then I think what you were talking about, you're going to fall off the map again because you need your legs to pitch. That's it's not just the arm. You got to have.
That is a fact. Yeah, that's science right there, Carm.
Yeah, we
need legs to pitch.
You got to have a base, and if you you don't have it, then we're going to have a problem. But
there's not a lot of holes on this team. I mean, we're really nitpicking here. Back into the bullpen help. Maybe a starting pitcher for the final push in the playoffs.
Maybe
another bat, another outfielder maybe?
Sure. I mean,
right? It's not like it's a need, but if we're going to talk about what they could be adding as we approach it, well, we're still got a while till the deadline. But as teams start to turn into buyers and sellers and the trade market sort of begins to develop over the next month or so here, that's really it. That's really it for the Cubs.
And the other news today around Chicago baseball, the big news is the White Sox have acquired James Shields from the San Diego Padres, Eric Johnson, Fernando Tatis going to the Padres. 34 years old, Shields, 2-7, 4.28 ERA, 57 strikeouts and 11 starts with the Pods this year. And he got smoked in his last start, gave up 10 runs. So
yeah, his ERA ballooned over a point or a run.
And this is a phenomenal competitor. Won a World Series with the Kansas City Royals, or made it to the World Series with the Royals. Was not on the team last year. Correct. Correct me if I'm wrong there. So regardless, he's always been big game James,
which doesn't really hold up because if you look at some of his performances in big games, they weren't really that great. But we'll roll with that nickname for now.
Yeah,
big game James is joining the White Sox starting rotation. Badly needed. They needed another starter. I thought they needed two starters. So I wouldn't be surprised if they still aren't going to be in talks with teams for another starting pitcher.
I think it's White Sox. This deal seems like they didn't give a whole lot.
Eric Johnson hasn't. They've given him starts over the past couple seasons, and he really hasn't emerged as a bona fide starting pitcher in the bigs. So to give him up for James Shields, and then you have Fernando Tatis Jr. is what, an 18-year-old prospect, a shortstop.
You know, the trade makes sense, although I do worry that the White Sox think they're better than they actually are. Let's bring in Jeff Passan, my guy, the lead baseball columnist for Yahoo Sports, wrote the arm. And Passan, you're really an impressive guy. Not many people can write a book and then have on the back of it a quote from John Smoltz, Hall of Famer. This is the most important baseball book in years, not just for major league pitchers like me who had Tommy John surgery, but for every parent who wants a child with a healthy arm. This is an epidemic that can be fixed, and the arm is a great first step. Are you able to fit your head through your standard doorway there? Because if John Smoltz was saying stuff like that about me, I don't think I could, you know, I wouldn't be myself. I'd be somebody else, and that I probably wouldn't be very likable at all. That's a big-time compliment for you, Jeff Passan.
Well, the highest praise I've gotten all year, Carm, is probably from you saying nice things about me. So I appreciate the sentiment very much, but as long as you still like me, that's all that matters.
Yeah, and you know, all kidding aside, though, you this was a labor of love for you. I mean, you're a baseball guy through and through, and you're a curious guy, I also would say, through and through. Like, you just like to find out reasons and go further than most people will go. Can you just talk about how the genesis of this book came to be, where you're like, you know what, I'm going to delve into this? And I think you wrote this well over a year. I mean, it was an immense amount of research that you did.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it was a 3.5-year process. It took a long time just following the two pitchers back from Tommy John surgery and trying to wrap my head around the whole thing, because look, the arm is a very complicated living creature, and it is very difficult to study, and you even the people who have devoted their careers to doing so still don't feel like they understand even a little bit of what's going on. So from that respect, I think I'm still confused by it, and still fascinated by it, and the subject to me, it's ceaselessly wonderful. But at the same time, there are definitely things that we can be doing these days that are just obvious for us to do these days to help pare back the number of injuries that are out there right now. And it starts with youth baseball, and I think that I just wrote something on Yahoo Sports yesterday about the very subject, why kids are still going out and throwing 150-plus pitches in games when we know what we know is absolutely freaking ludicrous.
Well, and Jeff, we had a local high school manager allow a pitcher, I believe this was last season, throw 167 pitches in a game, and his reasoning when asked by the local newspaper, he just said he told me that he could keep going.
Exactly.
Now the IHSA here is meeting later in the summer to talk about what sort of pitch count limits should be put in place. I think it's Alabama who has a very strict policy. They will fine high schools if pitchers go too long, throw too many pitches. They also will force the team to forfeit a game. So yep. We're seeing some changes, fortunately, being made at that level. But in your mind, how do we expand that sort of overseeing of the pitch counts? And what do you think should be the proper guideline for some of these younger pitchers?
Honestly, I think that by shaming, like I hate to say it, I don't want to be the guy who's sitting here and shaming everyone all the time, but that seems to be what works in this situation, that if you get publicly called out for being an ass, then you're probably less likely to do it going forward.
Right.
And, I feel like part of my role at this point in this whole thing is to be a watchdog and to be an advocate, to be somebody who stands up for kids and that allow, enables parents to say that, yeah, I'm going to be educated on this subject. And if I say something toward a coach that he might not like, I'm going to feel okay about that because I know what's right for my kid. And that's, there are two schools of thought here as far as who's to blame. Is it the parents or is it the coaches? And I think the answer in a lot of cases is it's both, because ultimately, the coaches are the ones making the decision on who's throwing however many pitches he is throwing, but the parents are the ones with the power to stop it. And if the parents do stop it, that has, I think, a huge impact and effect on how long this thing continues to go on and us stopping it and changing things.
Jeff Passan, Yahoo Sports, their lead baseball columnist with us here on 720 WGN. The book is The Arm. Go out and get yourself one. What's your biggest advice, I guess, to parents right now, Jeff? If some guys, mom or dad called you up and say, hey, my kid wants to be a baseball player. He throws pretty hard. I think he's got some talent. How do I make sure he doesn't end up with, in Tommy John surgery? What would you say?
The first thing I'd say is I can't and no one can, because there are some factors in place that, I don't know what the kid looks like mechanically. I don't know how biomechanically efficient he is. And I really don't know his genetics. I mean, that plays a big part in this. And genetics is like the great unknown at this point. We don't know what percentage it matters, but some people have different ligaments and tendons and muscles than others. And some people are going to have greater tensile strength. And, I mean, there are a million different factors that are going on here that can change that. But as far as usage goes, it's very simple. Don't have your kid pitch year-round. Have your kid play other sports. Limit them to about one competitive time pitching per week. And depending on the age, keep the pitch count down. And the kid's going to develop just as well if he is as talented as the parents think he is. And he's likelier to end up healthier because the usage was as limited as it was.
And Jeff, as crazy as this might sound, I've actually heard people throwing this idea out. Don't show pitchers the radar gun. Don't show them the velocity because they tend to throw harder, overthrow.
That is not a crazy idea at all. In fact, there will be a column coming on later this summer at a very interesting time of year, I think, that a lot of people are going to look at and say, Jeff Passan, you are an un-American person. Because I've been accused of that already because I've been saying, why teach the curveball? And here's the thing. The curveball, from all the studies that have been done on curveballs, researchers believe, and there have been multiple studies now, researchers believe that fastballs actually have more impact on the arm in stress and strain than curveballs do. But, why do we throw curveballs? We throw curveballs because at that age, when you're 10, 11, 12 years old, kids swing and miss at them, and you're getting outs. And my point to not throwing a curveball isn't that it's necessarily going to hurt the kid more or less. It's why are we stressing competitive baseball at 8, 9, and 10, 11, and 12, at these ages where, frankly, development should be paramount. And, again, I know people think, you're against competition. What's wrong with you? No, I'm not against competition. I'm against competition that ultimately is going to lead to harmful and potentially injurious thing for children. you can get competition, plenty of very good competition in sports or in other aspects of life that don't involve your arm being sore when you're 35 years old and you're having trouble opening a door.
Well, it's amazing, too, like how many coaches of 8, 9, 10-year-olds think they're actually managing the Chicago Cubs.
Right.
And they're, you're managing Little League, which, by the way, is cool, and it's a great give back. And I think it's awesome that you want to be involved and be, you know, heavily involved. But the lack of the big picture that we see from parents and coaches alike, it is frightening. There's a word. Here, Passan, let me ask you about the John Lester part, because here were the Cubs going $155 million for John Lester. I know you were very involved in their research. And, you know, a lot of Cub fans didn't know that the guy's got a bone chip in his elbow, which seems like something you would not want. But yet the Cubs gave him the biggest contract they'd ever given to a pitcher. Give us what you got in the Lester deal.
I mean, I was surprised that the MRI showed that. And when it did, I think there was some concern in Lester's camp, frankly. But ultimately, a bone chip, worst case scenario, is it goes somewhere it's not supposed to and does damage. But that's generally pretty rare. I mean, most likely, get it taken out at the end of the season. You're back for spring training. But again, when you got things floating around in there, it tends not to be good. John Lester's got an arm with a fair bit of mileage on it at this point, though. So the idea that the MRI was going to come back sparkling clean, it just wasn't a reality. No MRI is clean at this point. And Felix Hernandez has a partially torn ulnar collateral ligament, and the Mariners gave him $180 million. You know, there are certainly scenarios in which that happens, and it shows you that for an elite pitcher, teams are willing to delude themselves into thinking that everything's going to be all right. And it is until it isn't.
It's well said.
Hey, Jeff, stepping away from the book for a minute. Locally here, obviously the Cubs continue to roll. Not a whole lot of holes on that roster. The White Sox today acquired Padres right-handed starter James Shields. Your thoughts on both teams in town, and do you think the White Sox are realistically a contender?
I think the best thing the White Sox have going for them is their division. Mm-hmm. Because I don't think Kansas City, with all of its injuries, is as strong as it was last year. And I don't think Detroit, frankly, is all that significant of a threat. And Cleveland, for all the things that it's got going for it, still has holes as well. So I can see the American League Central being the type of division that takes 86, 88 wins, and you're into the playoffs. Mm-hmm. That being said, I mean, I don't know that the White Sox gave up all that much to get James.
No, they didn't. I think they won this deal, in my opinion. I think they're only having to pay half of what's due. Yeah. They gave up Eric Johnson and Fernando Tatis, a very young prospect.
Yeah, you got a couple factors. Number one, how will James Shields' stuff play at the cell?
Right.
If you go and look for the last couple of years, James Shields gave up 1.5 homers per nine last year, and I think it's probably like 1.2 or 1.3 this year. And he pitches at Petco Park, mm-hmm. Dodger Stadium, and AT&T Park for 100 out of the 162 games that he plays. Like, that is a staggering number of home runs to give up when you're pitching in these cavernous ballparks. And now he's going to, you know, one of the most homer-friendly places in all of baseball. Mm-hmm. So I wonder how James Shields' stuff will play in that park. Let's say hypothetically, though, that it plays well and that he's doing really well. There's a chance that he opts out after this season.
Right.
He's got $44 million left. Considering the free agent class coming up this year, you can make a pretty good argument that James Shields, even at his age, even with deficiencies, would, if not be the best free agent starter out there, but certainly one of the best free agent starters out there. And if he doesn't opt out, that probably means he wasn't very good. So the White Sox, they're not taking a significant risk here, but if they get a really good pitcher, he's a rental. And if they don't, they're stuck with a bad contract. Even if they're paying only half of it, it's still dead money. And we know what dead money looks like because it was named John Banks for the last couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
Jeff, we're up against the break. I love you. I miss you. The book is The Arm. 10-word answer or less, please. Are the Cubs going to win the World Series? Just say yes, and we'll say goodbye if you're comfortable with that.
I picked them to. I'm sticking with it.
That's my man.
There you go.
Passon, congratulations on the book, man. You're awesome.
Thanks, boys.
Thanks, Jeff.
Jeff Passon, the lead baseball columnist for Yahoo Sports. The book, once again, The Arm. Quick timeout, 720 WGN.
We're prepared to make a big move today if it presents itself. Unfortunately, our timing might not line up with the other 29 clubs just yet. It's still early in the process. A lot of clubs don't look to make those moves until June or July, but we're having dialogue right now, hoping that something comes together more quickly than that. Given our experience, it's probably going to take a fair amount more time, a few more weeks, before things get real serious along those fronts, though.
Well, today was the day there, General Manager Rick Hahn of your Chicago White Sox. James Shields in the fold. I'm Mark Carmen. He's Kevin Powell. We're halfway home. It's the back nine here at 720 WGN. This is The Beat with you till 7. Amy Guth warming up in the bullpen. We'll talk to Amy around 6:50 tonight. So what's going on in your dating life there, Kevin Powell? It's becoming a thing on 720 WGN.
It has become a thing. Rokan has devised a dating game for me. It's a 4-round process, I think. I'm sort of confused on the rules, and it seems to be changing day to day. But last Wednesday was round number one. Two female listeners who were listening put their names into the hat. They were chosen by producer Jeff to come into the studio. They're grilled with questions from the entire Rokan show with Anna DeVlantes, Judy, Violetta, all chiming in with questions. I have to stay up in the sports studio, so we never actually meet. And we ask them questions, and then at the end of the segment, we choose who's advancing to the next round. And the winner of all of this gets a date with me, Carm.
Now, why, with all due respect, and you're a phenomenally good-looking man.
Yeah, thank you, Carm.
You got a great personality and a beautiful golf swing, but why would women go to like such lengths to go out with you? How is there any other...
Because of what you just said, Carm, my amazing good looks, and especially because of my great golf swing.
Is there any chance that Ro is paying these women or WGN is offering other goodies?
So this started a week or two ago. We were soliciting for Ro was. All right. This is all behind my back. I'm not even involved with the planning process of the dating game.
Okay.
I walked in one day and they said, hey, we're doing a dating game. I'm like, I'm a team player. Let's do it, Rokan. So they came up with this plan. And before that, like a week before, something about, you know, sending in your phone number or you want to date Kevin. And next thing we know, the text line is getting flooded with photos of women sending their numbers, sending photos of themselves, like, trying to go out on dates with me, Carm.
What's your age range? Where are you willing to go?
Oh, it's, I mean, you know, how anywhere from like 18 to...
To what?
No, I'm not. I want to go 18. That's too low. In your 20s, 21, 21 to 29.
21 to 29.
Yeah.
So if a hot 35-year-old came along,
hot. And that's fine.
Okay. I'm cool, so now we're up to 35. What about a hot 45-year-old?
Yeah, I mean, then we're going to start to creep into cougar territory, so that'd be fine.
That would be fine. Do you want to continue this right now, 312-981-7200, or would that be crimping on the show?
Yeah, if you'd like to go out and date with me, send in a photo and your resume and a quick bio.
And so what dating apps are you on right now?
I'm just doing the Bumble right now.
The old Bumble, huh?
Yeah.
How's that working out for you?
It's all right. It works.
Yeah.
You know? But there's so many to choose from. I don't do the Tinder.
Why not?
Because it just takes photos and like everything from your Facebook page. Mm-hmm. Like it gathers all your photos. And I don't have a Facebook page.
You don't have a Facebook page?
The look on your face right now. No, I don't.
How's that possible?
I don't do Facebook.
You don't do Facebook.
I don't do Facebook.
You do Twitter.
I do Twitter. Do Snapchat.
You do the Snapchat.
Instagrams.
Yeah. Insti. But no. What do you got against Facebook?
Nothing against it. I just never was into it.
Interesting.
Yeah. So I don't do it. So I don't do the Tinder. Right now, it's just the Bumble. So swipe it's not right, swipe left.
It's not actually anything against Tinder. It's just that you don't have a Facebook page and you don't want to make that effort.
Right. I mean, right. I would have to create the Facebook page. I'd have to start posting photos on it.
Right, right.
So
right.
Tinder has enough material to grab from to form a bio for myself.
Right, right, right. Okay. So
So the next round of the dating game is this Wednesday, if you're wondering and if you want to tune in, Carl.
Okay. Well, I just want to support you in any way I can here, Kevin.
But you don't have to act so shocked when I tell you that women were texting in to date me, Carm.
Well,
I mean, you are like completely taken back that any woman in the world would want to date me.
No, hold on. Let me clarify my shockness. It's not that people were texting in, and it's not that people would call in, but the fact that they would come in studio. I guess right. It's cool to be on the radio and have that experience, but that still is a significant effort.
Well, the awkward part is at the end when they make the announcement and they go, it was Kate and Layla, and then at the end, Ro just goes, "Yeah, Kate, you won."
That was it?
And then it's like, all right, see you later. Kate, you've moved on to the next round.
Yeah, Kate, you win.
Congratulations.
What's your opinion on Kate right now?
Kate's in competition. Kate's there.
She's got a big smile on your face with Kate. You like Kate. You.
Because I'm not going to say anything negative about her. So she's very nice to come in. She's a nice girl. She lives near Bloomington Normal. So you're the bird, Carl.
So you're not into Kate.
I don't know. We'll see. We'll see what other talents out there.
Okay, so you're open to other contestants. Is that fair?
She's an underdog right now. But hey, the underdog comes out on top sometimes, right?
That's a beautiful.
She's the high seed. She's the 13 seed.
Well, let me give you a little bit of advice on the dating life. You know, you're not looking for anything serious, right? Or are you?
I'm a busy man, Carmen, right?
Busy man.
Working on the career a little bit.
Okay, so you're just looking for something light for the summer. A little summer flingy, perhaps?
Yeah, that works.
Summer fling, okay.
Yeah, that works.
All right, and you're how old again?
27.
You're 27 looking for a summer fling.
Yeah, you got anybody?
Maybe. I'd have to think about it for a second, but I could probably dial something up for you, yes. But, you know, I'll leave that to Ro and company to see how this all spins
Round
out.
Round 2 this Wednesday, Ro Con Show with Anna DeVos.
All right, well, I wish you luck on it.
Thank you, Carm.
Dating on the radio.
It's an update on my dating life.
Now here's another thing that I find fascinating. Last night, we were texting about the show, and you sent a text to me and Dan Long, our outstanding producer.
Danny Long.
And let me grab my phone here. If I can read the text exactly, I think that's what we need to do here. Because I was a little taken aback. I didn't even know that you knew that Long was on the text.
Yes, I started the text chain. I texted you and Dan right after Muhammad Ali died because we had to start game planning.
Okay, so your text was top 10 Ali lines. And okay, so we're talking Ali. And then Dan writes back, yep, tons of it. And then you write back, Long Dong killing it. and at that point, I was legit uncomfortable.
Why?
Because I just, you know, that just seems.
It just caught you off guard.
It's an aggressive text, I thought, with Long Dong killing it. And then 5 seconds later, 2 minutes to be exact on the text line here, Dan Long responding back, it's what I do. Now,
I don't know what that really meant.
So now I'm wondering to myself, and Dan, please chime in here. This is for you.
Sure.
I wouldn't call you Long Dong, but if you respond to it and you like it, I'd really like to. I could take that on.
It's worked today so far, hasn't it?
Yeah. Is that a name that you like to answer by?
You know, people have called me that in the past, and it just kind of grew on me. So I learned to respond to it.
It grew on you.
It grew, yeah.
Long Dong grew on
interesting
me.
Interesting. So you kind of like it.
You can get behind the Long Dong.
You don't hate it.
Yeah, I'm neutral, I guess.
You're neutral. You sure you're 50-50 on this? Is there a 51-49 perhaps? Pro or con?
Sure, maybe slightly pro.
Slightly pro. Okay. Well,
so
then
it's going to catch on here at
the
station.
That's fine. Now that is officially a thing. You are now not Dan Long. Long Dong is producing the show. I hope that's okay with management.
Yeah, I was going to say, this is going to go on until we get a call from
I'm not 100%.
Coach.
Well, you know, there was Long Duck Dong from the Great 16 Candles, which if we could get a gong now for you, I think you know, every time you talk, you could hit the gong and then open up the mic. Right. That'd be phenomenal. I think we're, you know, that would help ratings, Dan. If people like just people would tune in knowing that at some point the gong was coming.
He thinks is that the missing piece. You think?
Yeah, we're gonna hear it coming back after this quick timeout on 720 WGN. This is The Beat. I'm Mark Carmen. He's Kevin Powell.
Real quickly, Carm, because I've been bothering you about this.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Do you like soccer? Do you care about soccer?
I enjoy soccer. I like.
His name is.
Oh, there it is. I think you found it. We'll get to that in just a moment. Or do you want to get to that now?
Go ahead with that real quick, Dan. 3, 2, 1. Maybe.
His name is Long Duck Dong.
Thank you.
What's happening? Oh, it's the...
There you go. 16 candles. Okay, what's up with soccer?
Okay, the Copa America Centenario is underway, which is the South American Championships.
Mm-hmm.
If you would like to watch the South American Championships, you can do so because it's coming to Soldier Field. It's being played here in the United States, in North America.
What are you saying?
I'm saying
you have a problem with this.
I'm saying soccer, you're drunk and go home. Soccer in general is so weird. There's like a million tournaments. There's tournaments within tournaments. They're playing the South American Championships in North America.
Did you ever play it?
When I was a little kid,
did you like it?
You know, I'm not dissing the sport of soccer. I'm fine with it. I'm just saying, like, the governing bodies that oversee soccer, there's corruption. It's just goofy. They're playing the South American Championships here in North America.
I suppose that means...
Next golf is moving the U.S. Open to Canada.
Well, I suppose they are trying to promote the sport in some way, shape, or form.
Yeah, apparently they got a massive TV deal, and it all had to stem from money. It's just... I just had to throw that and mention that the South American Championships are being played here in North America. And they're going to be played... USA plays Tuesday night at Soldier Field, if you want to check that out.
Who are they playing? Do you know?
Costa Rica, I think.
U.S. at Soldier Field on Tuesday night.
Tuesday night.
I won't be there, but I wouldn't hate it if I was. How's that?
I wanted to go, but I have a thing to go to Tuesday night. U.S. will be playing Costa Rica Tuesday night at Soldier Field beginning at 7 o'clock.
All right. Let's see. 312 texting in, by the way. Don't act so innocent, Carm. You too are pimping yourself out datings for the rate. Let me try that again. You too are pimping out your dating life for ratings. Does the word J-swipe ring a bell? It does there, sir.
So what is J-swipe? Explain that to me.
J-swipe is the Tinder for Jews. That is a dating app that I have.
So am I allowed on that? Do you have to?
You are. Patty Vasquez joined.
Just to see?
Well, yeah. And Patty and I, we have connected on J-swipe, but she's one of my potential matches.
Wow, there you go.
Patty's wearing her Marine Corps outfit as her J-swipe profile.
So is it a classic swipe right, swipe left situation?
Yeah, and they've got an X and a heart for you.
Oh, okay.
You know, there's many Jewish single women out there for you, Kevin Powell.
Have you found success with J-swipe?
Well, we're in the early stages here. Okay. Early stages, but
the vetting process.
Yes, I'm certainly optimistic.
We have potentials.
Oh yeah, there are potentials for sure. Most definitely.
J-swipe.
Hey, you never know where it comes from in life, Kevin Powell. Could be walking down the street here on Michigan Avenue. Somebody looks in the window and says, ooh, I like that Kevin Powell. It's
could
my
be a
guy.
Dating game on the Rokan show with Anna DeVlantis.
Could be a date. Who is your biggest advocate on the show as far as the dating life is go? Who's like really trying to help you?
Oh, like pulling for me?
Yeah.
I didn't even solicit for any help for the dating life. It's been fine, but they apparently wanted to make this a thing and try to find a nice girl for me. Mm-hmm. I would say Rokan. I'd put it squarely on his shoulders.
Why aren't they doing the same thing for Violetta?
I don't know. You have to ask him.
Okay. Yeah. 269 texting in about soccer, saying soccer is the best group of fans to go party with. I travel to almost all USA matches, and you wouldn't believe what goes on. I've seen it.
Yeah, I've heard that as well. I've been to international matches at Soldier Field before, and it's awesome. I'm not dissing it at all. I'm just saying the governing bodies, the people that oversee soccer here in North America and South America, over in Europe, are just weird. It's like a million things going on. There's always corruption and odd things happening.
I was a vendor back in the day. It's the only career that I ever reached the pinnacle in. You know, I rose from cotton candy to malt cups to hot dogs to...
There you go. And what is the pinnacle? Selling beer?
That would be beer, yes, absolutely. And at Wrigley, you know, you got to get to Old Style, and then... This is back in the day. You got to get to Old Style, and then you would transition to Budweiser. When you got the red bin, you knew that you had made it. Now, okay. Now they got the 312 kicking around, so that just ruins everything. As far as the... Because the vendors don't know which to choose. But it used to be once you got to Budweiser, you had done it. White Sox had a collision in the outfield.
Yeah, that doesn't look good.
We'll update that in a minute here. But the point being, I sold at a soccer match with Poland, and you would always sell, like, if you were carrying Miller Lite, you'd carry in a case, you'd have 18 Miller Lites and 6 Miller Drafts, right? And you would be lucky to get rid of like 3 of the drafts before you had to go back, and everybody always wanted the light. Nobody ever wanted
those
to drink
are my
that.
People. Team Poland?
So Poland comes in here,
yeah.
And these are some real individuals. And it was unbelievable. No one wanted the Miller Lite. Draft.
Oh, they want the heavy stuff.
They want the heavy stuff.
They don't want any light. You know, I've done that before. That's sort of my thought process. If I'm at a game, a sporting event, I'm about to drop $8.75 for a beer. Budweiser, 5% alcohol. Bud Light, what, 3.8% alcohol? So if you're going to drop almost $10 on a beer, get a little more alcohol. I understand where they're coming from.
That's a decent way of looking at it. Adam Ho's going to join us after get a little more bang for your buck. Adam Ho's going to join us after the 5:30 news on his move. It's moving day right now. And the texter 331 is Patty Vasquez no longer married. No, Patty is married. She's on J Swipe as a bit. It's not real. She's not really trying to find a Jewish man to date. So Patty's still married. All right. So Adam will join us after the 5:30 news. 720 WGN.
Now back to the beat.
720 WGN. How do they follow you on Snapchat, Kevin Powell?
KP5189.
The old KP5189. What's 5189 in reference to?
89, the year I was born, greatest year ever. 51, Dick Butkus, greatest football player of all time. Next one.
You go Dick Butkus.
I've been using 51 when I was a little kid and I first started playing football. My dad was like, Dick Butkus.
Oh, that I was
watch highlights of him.
I
watched highlights of Dick Butkus, and since I was a kid, I've been using 51 in all sorts of variations.
Interesting. Very nice. Let's bring in our guy, Adam Hogue, who, of course, is normally with me, his co-hostie, my beat buddy, who's in the middle of his move. Adam got movers because the show told him to, and he listened. Hi, Adam. Have you, now that you're seeing the move, and we miss you, by the way, have you made the right decision in your mind?
Yes. Let's be clear. I am not really in the middle of the move. I mean, we are now at the portion of unpacking, but the movers are gone by now because they're professional movers, and this is what they do for a living. And maybe what's most impressive was it was right on the dot of the estimate. 8.5 hours was the estimate.
Oh, my God.
They nailed it really almost to the minute. We're talking about like maybe a 5-minute variation. And let's be honest, had we tried to do this ourselves, we probably still would be packing the truck at the first house.
Yeah, Adam, Karm was filling me in on this. I said, why am I filling in for Hogue today? He says he's moving. I go, oh, man, moving is the worst thing. I hate moving.
Yeah.
I hate helping people move. Getting movers was a dynamite decision by you. That's a no-brainer.
Well, that's what it turned out to be. I wrestled with the decision for a long time. It was a matter of pretty much saving. Came out to about probably $1,400. Difference if we just done it ourselves. However, like I said, first of all, let me talk about the
so this way is $1,400.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's a
he's
lot
got
of
a
money,
house.
Which, yeah,
right. Well, that is a lot of money. That's the difference between paying for professional movers and packing a U-Haul truck by yourself. But watching this guy. And it's Borman Movers. Those are the guys that helped me out today. Fantastic four-man crew. But the guy who packed the truck, I guess, has a reputation. He's the best packer of all time, is what I was told. And you should – because when they pull up with his truck, I was expecting, like, a semi. And it wasn't. It wasn't small either, but I was like, is that thing going to be big enough? And they filled this thing – exactly to the brim, and that guy used every single inch of space possible. I'm pretty sure he has to be a professional Tetris player on the side to be able to do what he did with that truck. I was thoroughly impressed, and it all fit, and it all got here in one piece. We had a small issue with getting our refrigerator down in the basement.
Ooh, refrigerator's a tough move.
Yeah, the only mistake they made all day was they didn't take the doors off that refrigerator.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it probably would have saved 30 to 45 minutes. But you know what? Everything got here in one piece. So.
Adam, did you, before you did this, because, look, we work in radio, show business, try to get free stuff, right? Did you at any point kind of wander through our sales department and mention that you were on a move and a potential sale, maybe an endorsement deal where you didn't even have to pay, and the, you know, gave some props to the moving company? Did you try to go that route?
A little bit, and I don't know, Carm, we spent, what, four shows talking about this? And I'm assuming our sales staff listens to the beat. I don't know. I hope so.
Yeah.
But it was pretty well known, I think, around the station that this was happening.
Okay. We did do an excessive amount on your moves.
4 weeks on a move. Guys.
Well, see, that's...
And assuming we're on the air right now, we're still doing it.
All right. We need to it's high-quality production, talking moves for four weeks.
It was a big – well, Adam also was giving up cable.
How's that going, by the way?
Another thing we got to update, the official account, if you were betting at home, which I think a lot of our listeners were, if you had 20 days, you win. 20 days was the official amount that we went without cable. It was installed yesterday.
Nice.
New house. And we talked a little bit about last week about why I was going back to cable, but really it came out to like a $20 difference when it was all said and done per month. I mean, $20 per month is a decent amount, but for the convenience of having it all in one place on your cable box instead of like having to switch to like all these different online streaming services and different devices.
How did you watch Sox or Cubs when they were on Comcast?
Yeah, I found a way to do it.
I'm just very glad that you didn't have to do this in January or February.
David Jennings weighing in from the newsroom. Adam Hoge, your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I think our movers are probably too. However, they probably move all the time in those times of years. I'm sure they're not as busy, and they probably actually welcome the money, so maybe they aren't. But we actually – okay, so the rain was a problem a little bit today, but I'm guessing the movers would take rain any day over, like, 95 and sunny.
Yeah, the heat will kill you.
Because they just worked right through it. It was like everything was wrapped. They didn't care. They got soaking wet, and everything was good. But the heat's probably worse.
Adam, your thoughts on James Shields, White Sox? Your thoughts on the deal?
Yeah, I was informed midway through the move by my brother-in-law, that future brother-in-law, to be perfectly
Accurate.
Yes, thank you.
You got it.
That they're getting married on Labor Day weekend, the day of Northwestern's opener, and the day Wisconsin's playing LSU at Lambeau Field. And 90% of probably the people going to that wedding would like to be at Lambeau Field. So this is a whole other story that I just dove into. But is worth maybe three other segments of radio, in my opinion. Do not get married on holidays, especially during football season. Anyway, White Sox, though, James Shields, loved the move, didn't really give up a whole lot. James Shields, I mean, pitched awful last week. But
ERA was 3 before that.
Yeah, he was 3, and 3 is what you want. I mean,
right.
If he pitches in the 3s the rest of the season, really what you're trading for James Shields to be your number 3, right? I mean, hopefully he's really your number 4 if Carlos Rodon steps up his game and pitches how he's supposed to. But, you know, for number 3, number 4, he pitches in the 3s. It's a great trade. White Sox have really been operating without a fifth starter for most of the season. You could argue at times they didn't really have a number 4. So,
I still think they need another starting pitcher. They're really going to contend.
Yeah, you could argue that. And they certainly probably need to figure out a couple more bats in that lineup. What's the score right now in this game? Is it over yet?
4-2 Detroit. White Sox just went out in the top of the 8th, so going to the bottom half. Sox one more shot at it, down by 2. This has been an awful stretch, and yet the White Sox are still trying to...
Still not. There's a game and a half back.
I know, but
yeah, it's in the early going, but it's not
their third straight Chris Sale loss or fourth straight.
Yeah, you score 2 runs when Chris Sale starts, you expect to win, but
it's either the third or fourth straight game that they've lost with Chris Sale on the hill, which is that's got to stop. I mean, that's a big problem. He really only had one bad start in that stretch. I believe the game against the Indians, he didn't pitch all that well. Otherwise, he's been pretty good.
I mean, they didn't give up anything. Bottom line in the deal, but they have lost seven in a row, 8 of 10, and today would be 9 of 11 unless they rally in the ninth. So the concept that they're a contender, I think, is very much up in the air.
I think that if they're going to be contenders, they have to add a lot of pieces. They absolutely have to add another bat, if not two, and I think they have to add another starting pitcher. You've seen how bad the bullpen. When the bullpen's bad, they're bad.
You know? Yeah, well, I mean, James Shields, you need to do now because you. I don't know that you would have gotten to late July.
Exactly.
And really known if you were a contender. So James Shields buys you, hopefully, what, you're talking 10 starts in that time period, maybe a little bit less than that, and hopefully it's buying you a little bit more time to figure out what you are. So maybe the Sox can go another month, figure out, all right, are we getting this thing turned around or not? But the schedule is not easy. These games against the Tigers are probably actually the easiest games you have, other than I think there's another series with the Twins coming up at some point. But next week it's the Nationals and Kansas City again. So this is a tough stretch, and I don't necessarily, unless James Shields can all of a sudden hit and join the lineup every single day, which obviously is not happening. I'm not too optimistic about this next week or so.
Your thoughts on Garbine Muguruza beating Serena Williams in the French Open final?
Garbine,
never heard of that person.
It's unfortunate. You should.
Yeah, I've heard of Serena Williams.
Oh, very good.
Yeah, I have no idea who that other person you mentioned is. So,
and Adam, your thoughts on Muhammad Ali? What did he mean to you?
So every once in a while, I think someone in the world passes away that when the news crosses. And for me, I went to bed early last night because of the move, and so I saw it about 5:30 this morning. You know, you stop and you can't help but get tears in your eyes and really get moved by what moved me more so than anything was just you go across Twitter, you go across Facebook this morning. I mean, every single person had something to say about Muhammad Ali or some cool video or some awesome quote. I had a tweet that I sent out back in December when Muhammad Ali issued a statement about Donald Trump's idiocy with Muslims and some of the statements he was making. Muhammad Ali issued a statement on it, and that tweet from December like blew up today, apparently. It kept getting retweeted, and if you go look at that statement, it's on my Twitter account. I think that just seeing those moving words from him shows you the impact that he still had even in this past calendar year on the world. And he will continue to have too after his death. So obviously a huge loss today, and it was cool though seeing all the moving tributes, but it was certainly really sad news this morning to see, and couldn't help but get tears in my eyes when I saw it.
Life is about the learn and grow, always trying to better yourself. Here's a quote from Muhammad Ali. The man who views the world at 50 the same as he did at 20 has wasted 30 years of his life.
Wow, yeah.
Let that one just wash around for a second there.
So how many years of your life have you wasted?
I'm 42, so about 38. But those four, though, were strong.
Strong four-year stretch.
Just very strong, strong four. I just think it's cool that, listen, the guy's been to the White House with Jimmy Carter, with Ronald Reagan, with George Bush, with there's pictures of him with Malcolm X, with literally every notable person in the history of this country. Muhammad Ali basically has a picture with. That's how beloved he was, despite the fact that there was so many people didn't know how to handle this outspoken African-American guy in the 1960s who didn't want to go and fight in Vietnam, who gave up his career at the time, went to jail. I just love the fact that we've been able to celebrate him today, and I also hate the fact that we were robbed of like 20 years of his life because of Parkinson's and really hearing the thoughts that were going on in his head. So we'll do another little tribute coming up at 6:35. Adam, you're back tomorrow on the old beat, correct?
Yeah, I'll be there with you tomorrow. We'll probably only do, let's see, we have a 3-hour show, so like 2.5 hours on moving. Sound good?
No, that'll move the ratings. There's no doubt. We're going to take over the town.
Must listen.
No, we can get past that. But talk a little bit more James Shields and I don't know, Carm. This NBA Finals.
Game two tomorrow night, baby.
I was all excited about it, but I don't know now.
You think it's all over? Warriors sweep.
I hope not. I want to see seven games. So let's go Cavs.
All right. Okay. I can't get myself to say that, but game two tomorrow.
At least tomorrow.
Okay. I mean, I wouldn't be completely disappointed if Golden State just rolled through, because that whole LeBron thing, I just haven't gotten there yet. I can't really root for him.
What did he ever do to you?
He was compared to Michael Jordan. It wasn't his fault.
I mean, that is extremely offensive for a Mark Carmen.
Once you're compared to Mike, I have to turn on you.
Yeah, nobody's compared to MJ for the Carm.
Yeah,
it's not LeBron's fault. Oh, he didn't compare himself to Michael. He just happened to be really, 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 really good at basketball.
Well, but hold on. Let's rewind that for a second. LeBron did say that he wants to go down as the greatest of all time, and then there was... You've got Pat Riley in Miami who was calling him the GOAT and the boat and the whole thing. And okay, which is the acronym for greatest of all time or best of all time. And when you start throwing that stuff out, I got to draw the line. We're not going to have that. Sorry.
All right.
So that's it. But maybe I'll mature by tomorrow. And just
What do the Cubs do today? They beat another team by like 19 runs?
5-3. You know,
Run differential up to, let me see here, 142. Just a cool 142, no big deal.
On pace for 117 wins.
I mean, they're only winning 5-3 today. Is that, I mean, you're a little worried? Not about today, in general. Is that going to...
Are you mocking when I got worried when they lost three in a row?
Yes, I am. That's exactly what I'm doing.
It's a good job by you. It's a okay. Very good job by you, and I appreciate it. All right, Adam, you're the man.
All right. See you tomorrow, Carm.
Later.
That's Adam Hogue, who paid for movers and is very happy that he did. Quick timeout, 720 WGN.
Bonus man is going to whoop George Foreman, and I'm going to whoop him of all places in Africa, in the Congo, where the Lumumba boys are.
Not fighting your home territory. You couldn't be any happier the way this is coming up in September.
Why would you call Africa my home territory?
You've been telling me that for 10 years.
That's right, and if you come over there talking like that, we'll cook you.
My favorite media personality / athlete might be Howard Cosell and Muhammad Ali. This is Howard Cosell.
There are so many clips, and we mentioned earlier GIFs. Those of you not familiar with GIFs, it's basically just sort of a short video clip, no longer than what, Carm? A few seconds?
You're the GIF expert on the show right now, Kevin.
Okay, that's how I would explain it. Just like a 3-second snap of a video. And they're perfectly... Dan Long, are you going to chime in?
Also, I'm pretty sure it's GIFs. Because the G stands for graphic, does it not?
Yeah, but the guy who created them years ago first called it a GIF. I'm rolling with that.
Okay.
I'll roll with the inventor. But yes, that's an argument that has been made many times. But my point is, it's all over Twitter. There's just so much good footage of Ali and his footwork and just having fun. There's a video, I think he dodged 21 punches in 10 seconds during a fight when he was pinned in the corner. Go to YouTube and just type in Muhammad Ali. There's unbelievable footage of his past fights and great interviews.
There's some great pictures on Twitter, too, like Evander Holyfield tweeting out, remembering the good old days with Ali. Rest in peace, my brother. I will never forget you. And a great picture at the ESPYs of Holyfield. And at this point, Ali's well into his Parkinson's, which, you know, that was very well put by Rick Tellender, who joined us around 3:45 earlier today. We'll have that podcast up after the show. And Tellender is talking about he hates that he was a boxer.
Right.
Because the world got robbed of one of the most entertaining, dynamic personalities because he fought. Maybe if he had fought less. And also, like, his Parkinson's directly related to being in the ring and to the toughness that he showed. Like, I am not going to go down. And maybe the greatest boxing match ever, him and Joe Frazier, where Frazier did not come out for the 15th. They basically killed each other.
Mm-hmm.
He said it was the closest
he felt to dying.
To dying in the ring, yes. Which is just, that is some, you're putting yourself through torture to win.
A great man. Jerry from earlier didn't agree.
No, Jerry was rough.
But for the most part, all texts and calls and things online and social media have been nothing but positive things about Muhammad Ali.
Yeah, if you want to share your thoughts on Muhammad Ali, feel free, 312-981-7200. We will talk to Mike Farron, who does great work with the Arizona Diamondbacks, and MLB.com after the 6 o'clock news. Get a little national baseball perspective from Mike, who, of course, used to work at the station. People familiar with WGN should be familiar with the great Mike Farron. And we'll do an Ollie tribute at 6:35, some of his greatest quotes and comments. We've got stuff from Roy Leonard and talking about Sonny Liston and the Rumble in the Jungle and a bunch of stuff. So we'll do that at 6:35. Quick timeout, get you set for news, 720 WGN. So breaking news, Kevin Powell.
Yeah. What do you got?
A little emotional for me.
Okay. Did you hit a match on J-Swipe?
No, we're off the dating, but we're on to my athletic career, which is more important.
Yeah.
And as you know, because it was in the Tribune headline, I did win my opening round match in the club tournament over Mahmoud.
Oh, over who?
Mahmoud.
Oh, Mahmoud. He's got a great forehand.
He does, but it was nothing for what At the Carm was bringing. 6-1, 6-0, big winner.
Nice.
Moved on to the second round.
Okay.
Against my nemesis, Joaquin.
Oh, Joaquin.
Joaquin.
Great backhand.
Yeah, phenomenal. Walked in last night, 6 o'clock match. All right. I got my mind right. I'm coming from Cubs.
You're feeling good.
Covering the Cub, coming over. And I'm saying to myself, walk on the court with a presence.
Right.
Show that you're not there
Make
to be messed
your
around.
House.
Yeah.
That's your territory.
I put the towel over the shoulder.
Right. Nice pro move.
I mean, I have a hat on. Get the news in a second. This is very important. I we're friends, but I wasn't in a friendly mood. How are you doing?
Right. You know, what's up, Joaquin?
Yeah. His first set. Carm comes out strong. Up 4-2. Feeling great about it. 4-3, 4-4. Carm goes back up 5-4. Chance to win the set.
Yeah.
5-5, 5-6. 7-5 loser.
Oh, heartbreaker.
Normally, I'm pretty good at keeping my composure.
Yeah.
Lost it for a second there.
Did you?
Racket flung to the back wall. It was really irritating.
I can't see the Carm getting upset like that. I would have liked to have seen that.
It happened.
I mean, ESPN was covering, right? So I
They were there. I talked to Tirico on the changeover.
Yeah, broke it down.
He said, hang in there. I said, all right. I was still probably affected by my outburst. Go down 0-1, 0-2 in the second set. Rally back 2-1, 2-2, 3-2.
Oh, nice.
Carm's up 40-11, 3-2 game. Weak return by the Carm, push it back. Joaquin smokes it past me. Weak return by the Carm, smokes it back. Joaquin smokes it past me. Give away the game, 3-3.
Devastating.
Next game, I had the easiest volley you could ever have at the net. Missed it, just awful.
Heartbreaker.
Mm-hmm. This point, lost it again. Hit the ball over to the backstop onto the court 2 down the way. Had to leave the court, go get the ball as Joaquin was taking a nice rest. Was really losing my mind last night. And ended up losing the set, and I'm out of the tournament.
The Carm-Joaquin rivalry continues. Devastating. I'm sorry to hear that, Carm. Do you normally do, all the pros at the end of the... At the end of the tournaments, they throw like their sweatbands in the crowd and sign autographs. Do you normally do that with the gallery? But not this time, right? You just wanted to get to the locker room and get out of there.
I went to the net. I said, Joaquin, congratulations. Best of luck to you in the tournament. Going to be honest with you, Joaquin, this one hurts. And he's like, I know. It was a good match. And I said, Joaquin, I will see you next time.
See you next year, Joaquin.
And then it was...
Hey, Joaquin.
Okay.
Watch your back.
Well, I'm not going to get violent with Joaquin. David Jennings, the news getting antsy. But it was a tough one. And I appreciate you letting me get that out. I feel slightly better.
Another 2-2. Hit well out of the deep right center. And gone! They get that run right back. It's 5-3.
I'll make it 2 out of 4 for Rizzo.
Line cut by Zobrist. Cubs win. A chance for a 9-1 homestand and a sweep if they can take tomorrow. And it'll be Jake Arrieta on the mound.
They're decent.
Best team to ever play baseball. Doing it again today. Beating the Diamondbacks 5-3.
Best team to ever play baseball.
If I don't go with hyperbole on the Cubs right now, I really don't know what to do. It's just ridiculous.
You're actually kind of right going with that angle, because what else can you really say about the Cubs at this point?
I mean, they're being compared to the Big Red Machine. Might as well throw the 1927 Yankees in there. They're on pace for 117 wins. Let's talk to an expert. Former WGN voice, You've heard him all over the station for many years. He worked here, then he left, and then I took his job. And it's all coming full circle at this moment. Mike Farron, pre- and post-game for the Diamondbacks, who, of course, are in town one more game tomorrow, and also does great work with SiriusXM's MLB Network Radio, joining us on 720 WGN. Farron, did I go too far there calling him the best team ever? I mean, from where you sit, what do you think?
It's funny. One of our regulars on our show on Sirius is Andy Green, the manager of the Padres, and he jokingly called them that free. They came in and took 2 out of 3 from the Cubs. So I thought that was, listen, I don't know, I guess, if we're going to call them the best team ever, but they're clearly the best team in baseball right now.
And that's the reality.
Well, moving forward, Mike, if we are going to try to pick this team apart and continue to talk them, not in hyperbole, when McCormick's not doing that,
to know that Andy Green and others are doing the same. But continue on. Sorry, Kevin.
Where could the Cubs add to this roster? Is it bullpen help? Is it an extra starting pitcher to have in their arsenal? Is it an outfielder? What do you think they need to add for the stretch?
Well, what do they need to add?
Right. Well, that's what I mean.
That's the thing. They probably don't need to. Where can they improve? I mean, I think you hit on the three spots. I mean, I think, you're starting to see, I don't want to necessarily see some warts, but you're starting to see some of the bullpen arms kind of come back to where you may have expected them to be. I know Clayton Richards struggled recently, and Cahill today didn't look like he wanted any part of Paul Goldschmidt in a really big spot in that game. So I think you could probably look at that and say, well, we can upgrade either getting the ball to Hector Rondon or, at the end of games and pushing Rondon back. But I don't think you need to make a major move there. I mean, I think adding a, setup guy does that. I think from a starting pitching depth standpoint, if you were to add another starter, I don't think anybody – I mean, listen, what, all 5 starters have ERAs under 3 right now, right? Nobody's going out of the rotation. Right. So if you wanted to add somebody that, perhaps gave you some depth in case you were concerned about, Jason Hamill's hamstring or Kyle Hendricks in the second half, then I think that would be a route. Well, if you wanted to add somebody in left field, to play that position more regularly – to upgrade over the production that you've had from Jorge Soler when he's played. And I think that's a possibility too. But, the lineup is and the position players are pretty flexible. And I think that, certainly plays to Joe Maddon's strength. The bullpen's been pretty good, especially the A guys. And Adam Warren, I thought, was a great pickup this winter. I liked him better as a starter even than as a reliever. But I think he's pitched awfully well. And the rotation's been dynamite. So, I don't know. I think it's kind of like, yeah, you certainly, improve the roster somewhere, but I don't think that they need to go out and make any major splash. Now, that's to say that they will or they won't, but I just think that, what you're looking at is incremental improvements on the roster are all that they could do or need to do, and I don't even think they need to do that. It's a pretty good roster to begin with.
Mike Farron, pre and post for the Arizona Diamondbacks MLB Network with us here, 720 WGN. What do you, if you're the Cubs, Farron, what do you do with Jake Arrieta? Are you just letting this play out? Because that's what it seems like it's going to be. Or do you try to get him in a room and say, look, we're willing to do X, let's make this happen, and we'll buy you out, the rest of this year and next season and maybe 4 years after that?
Well, I mean, I think, it takes two to tango. So, I mean, How badly does Jake Arrieta want to put together a contract right now? I mean, he's a supremely confident guy, and that's part of the reason why he, is the reigning National League Cy Young Award winner. And he's a guy that's basically spent his entire life betting on himself. So he's not going to take less than market value to be able to stay. So I think it's pretty easy. I mean, it's, let's use the Steven Strasburg contract as an example because it's the same agent, Scott Boras. Strasburg got what I think there was a perception to some because he would have been the only starting pitcher on the free agent market really who, had a strong track record this year. That may have gotten a little bit of a discount, but you've got to remember that, he far exceeded the previous high for a deal for a pitcher that had Tommy John surgery. Arrieta hasn't had any major physical problems as a pro, and he's a little bit older maybe than it feels like based on where his experience level is, but he's certainly a $30 million a year pitcher. So if you want to extend him for 7 and 210 or 7 and 230 or whatever it is, great. But does that make the most sense for the Cubs to do that, especially when they're in the midst of a 7-year contract with another starting pitcher who's going to be playing into his mid-30s. And I think that's a really dangerous game to play when you start giving out too much money to guys who are over the age of 30, and especially pitchers, because you know, position players, when they get hurt, that you still tend to get some value back from them. When you have pitchers get hurt, they miss a significant amount of time. So I'm not talking about, you know, little things. I'm talking about, you know, having surgical injuries. So to me, you know, it's interesting, and you know, where does Arrieta want to be, at least in terms of the finances? And you know, how much sense does it really make for the Cubs to try and sign anybody up long term at this point? You know, it's not like you're buying a guy who's 25 years old. You're talking about a guy closer to 30.
Mike, on the south side, the White Sox struggles continue. They added James Shields today, giving up Eric Johnson and Fernando Tatis Jr. What are your thoughts on that trade, on James Shields, and do you think the White Sox are true contenders moving forward?
Well, I mean, the White Sox are getting something like $30 million in this deal, yeah. Right? I mean, so you're talking about, what, 3 years and $26 million, basically, and for James Shields?
And he does have an opt-out, though. After
yeah,
this.
Well, okay, so well, here's two things. One, if he takes that opt-out, he's probably not going to get that same money in free agency unless he pitches, you know, the best baseball of his life right now, unless he decides that he wants to go back to Southern California. And I'd heard that he really wasn't interested in leaving San Diego, that he wasn't planning on taking the opt-out there because he loved it. He's from Southern California, so maybe that's part of it. But, okay, let's say that you get Shields for the remainder of that. I mean, you're talking about, what, $8.5 million a year, basically?
Right.
For a guy that's, if not anything else, been an incredibly durable starting pitcher. I mean, they need innings. This is a big upgrade to their rotation over what they've had out of the four and five slots, whether it be, you know, Matt Latos or Miguel Gonzalez. And, you know, if you consider that they had basically a $13 million windfall when Adam LaRoche retired, plus whatever other money they may have had, you know, kind of on the books that they knew that they could use for upgrades at the trade deadline, it doesn't take them out of making the play for something else to help the offense. And I think that's what's really interesting about this deal, is that the Padres are eating more than half the money to jettison James Shields. The White Sox didn't give up really anything that's going to impact them in the short term. You know, maybe Eric Johnson, you know, finds some level of consistency and becomes an okay major league starter, but I don't think his ceiling is even as high as James Shields. And Fernando Tatis Jr. is what, you know, 5, maybe 6 years away from the big
right.
leagues? I mean, he just signed at 16, so at best. So to me, this is a great move for the White Sox, and it helps. Now you're looking at a rotation that's, you're under control, that Sale, Shields, Quintana, Rodon. I mean, that's a really formidable top four, not just for this year, but for the next couple, if in fact Shields doesn't opt out.
Mike Farron, pre and post game for the Arizona Diamondbacks, MLB Network Radio. Okay, so it seems like there's a significant push to move the strike zone to the top of the knee. That still has to be decided, but it looks like it's going to happen. Baseball wants more action, Mike Farron. Now, they also want quicker games. So I don't know how that all boils together, but what's your take on moving the strike zone up?
Well, you know, I think Jason Stark at ESPN wrote a really good look at this week. And, you know, listen, the first time that the bottom of the strike zone ever changed was in 1996 when they moved it to the hollow of the knee. And in Jason's explanation, it was more to get umpires to recognize the low strike. The strike zone is as low as it's ever been. It's being called lower than it ever has been before. And I think part of it is a decline in offense, but it leads to a decline in offense. But the other part of it is the decline of balls being put in play. So, you know, will walks go up? Potentially. Will offense go up? Potentially. Will balls be put in play more? Well, that's certainly what they're guessing. I think it was something like, you know, 5,000 fewer balls put in play or something like that over the course of this season as there was in, say, 1995. No, I don't think it's about time of game. I don't think it's – I think that's – you know, Rob Manfred's been really clear about that it's – we're not talking about time of game. We're talking about the pace of the action. People are willing to sit and watch 3.5 hours of football on Sunday because they perceive that there's a lot of action. People are willing to watch baseball games for 3 hours, but the question is how you get young people to buy into watching baseball. Is it to make the game – go faster, to be done sooner, or is it to make there more action within the game? And to me, I think he's right on with that. I mean, if you can find ways to get the ball and play more, whether it results in more run scoring or not, it just has a better flow to it, a better pace. I mean, there's something like 30% of all plate appearances right now are ending in either a walk or a strikeout. That's the highest level in baseball history. So get the ball in play and make it work.
Tigers just beat the White Sox 7-4 as Hawk Harrelson calling this the road trip from hell as it continues with yet another loss today.
And you said they won a series in New York on it, too.
That is true. That's true. Before you go, Mike, I'm just curious your opinion because you talk to so many people. How much do you think the manager is worth? Like, to me, the Cubs would be great without Joe Maddon, but I don't think they get to where they got last year without Joe Maddon. He was super aggressive with Addison Russell moving to short and benching Castro and handling everything that comes with being a Cub. Like, I think the guy deserves a ton of credit. And maybe there are only a few managers in the game that do, but if you do have an elite one like La Russa was for the Cardinals back in the day, I mean, I think it makes a huge difference. Where do you come out?
Yeah, I think you make a really good point on that, Mark. I mean, I think it's the guys that are at the really high end do have a greater impact than where most managers fall, you know. And I think those guys are so few and far between, though. I mean, you might only have two or three of them. It's almost, you know, it's almost like the curve on position players, right? You know, so like you take first baseman, and there might be two or three guys that are total difference makers, and then there's a group that are pretty good. And there's a group that are pretty average. And there's some guys that are below average, and then there are two or three that are just not very good at all. And I think that's the case with big league managers, too. I think it's probably the case with big league general managers. I think it's probably the case with radio program directors. I think it's probably the case with people who run accounting firms. You know, there are always going to be people that are better at their job. And I think Joe Maddon's one of the best at it. And I think that you're right. I mean, they probably do not get to this point this quickly. They still would be a good team, but he's helped to create a culture there to buy into. And I think that, you know, it's important to find either one of two things: players that fit the style of your manager, or for a manager to be adaptable to the style of the personnel that he has. And I think those are the things that are really unique. And I think the people that adapt to the style of personnel that they have are really the best managers. I mean, I think they're the best in just basically any kind of coaching, is that if you are able to change what you want to teach or what you want to do based on the personnel to get the most out of them, you're probably going to have the best success.
Mike, what's up with the Diamondbacks? They got the new uniforms. They got their new top base. 10 games under 500 right now.
There was a poll on Sports Talk Live that which is the ugliest uniform in baseball, and the D-backs go number one. I actually like the uni. I think it's got a tough little flavor to it.
Yeah, I would assume that was a lot of 50- and 60-year-olds voting in that, because it seems like the 12-year-olds really dig it. But, you know, listen, it's a young team. It's a team that has... I think been inconsistent, really, in a lot of its performance, and I think some of it is tied to youth. It's been more of a struggle than I thought it was going to be coming into the year. I thought this would be a pretty good team, and you know, what, 10 games under 500 now. I'm a little bit surprised. Greinke's really been pretty good since the first week of the season. He was dynamite his last time out. You know, Archie Bradley, you guys saw yesterday. Boy, the last two starts he's had, he looks like he's turning a corner. We get a good report on Shelby Miller today in his extended spring game. That's been a real, real problem for him this season in finding any level of consistency. But, you know, it's young starters. You got some young position players that are getting their feet wet. And, you know, I think it's everybody. I mean, Mark, you dealt with this when you were in Kansas City, right? I mean, I feel like we had this conversation 5-6 years ago about the Royals, right? When the Hosmer Moustakas group was coming up, some guys take longer to get it at the big league level than others. And you know, we're still talking about a group of players that have like 700, 800 plate appearances in the big leagues. They're not even close to kind of being finished products. So to me, I think that's the biggest thing. The middle of the lineup with, you know, Paul Goldschmidt swinging the bat better now is certainly more formidable. You guys have seen Jake Lamb the last couple of days. He's been dynamite. Should get David Peralta back on Monday. I think there's some hope that maybe by August, A.J. Pollock is back in the lineup. But, you know, it's been a disappointment to this point for sure. But I think it is a talented group, and it is a young group. You're still, I believe, the youngest roster in baseball. It's amazing. The oldest regular is Wellington Castillo at 29, and the oldest starter is Zach Greinke at 32. The next oldest is Patrick Corbin, and he's 27. So it's still a really young group.
Yep. on their way. Those Royals teams that you mentioned, they had some 70-win season, but you could just see that it was on the way. They're not going to be winning 75 for very much longer. Mike Farron, former WGN, going on to great things, doing great work with the Diamondbacks and MLB Network. We appreciate you jumping on, Sir Farron.
Hey, anytime, guys. Take care.
Thanks, Mike.
All right, Mike Farron with us here on 720 WGN. I'm tempted to call Farron Mr. Baseball. We are late for a break, so we'll do that right now. It's Tigers beat the White Sox 7-4, Cubs over the Diamondbacks 5-3. 720 WGN. Wish you were handier around the house. Excuse me. Learn how to tackle those DIY projects with some help from local home experts. You can do it with Weekend Workbench, Sunday mornings at 11 on WGN TV.
I'm the least handy man around. I'm the complete opposite of Mr. Fix-It.
Are you Jewish?
No.
Because I am. And I think that part of my culture has stopped me from being handy, which is a complete and utter cop-out I should have learned. Can you change a light bulb?
I think I can do that for the most part. See, I grew up with my dad could fix anything. You know, he's the handy one. So anytime I need something done, it was just yell for my dad and he'd fix it. So I never had to do it. Plus, I don't like doing that stuff anyways. I always feel like I'm going to make it worse, make the situation worse.
If you had a drain that was clogged, could you do anything pour Drano?
Maybe get like a plunger and try that, pour some Drano. I don't know. I would Google it and try to figure it out, but it probably wouldn't end well.
Could you go out and buy a comforter and get a duvet and put it around there and accurately make your bed look good and throw some pillows on there?
Yeah, but that's not really like...
I'm trying to dial it all the way back.
Yeah,
just
I got
really
you.
Basic.
Trying to figure out what I can do. I can make a bed. I can fluff a pillow.
Could you do it like Marine style and get a super tight, like the sheets all pearled?
I think I could do that. I think I can make a solid bed.
What about a dishwashing? How's your dishwashing skills?
Dishwashing's easy because I just, you know, you just put it in the dishwasher, close the door, and hit go.
See, now I feel like you don't rinse and you leave just a stuck ketchup pile of nastiness.
Yeah, I rarely rinse. I just put it in there. But it comes out clean. It works.
I don't see
it. It's a high-quality washing.
Mm, mm.
It works, man. I'm telling you.
Okay, when you go bachelor pad Powell and the ladies are running through, just do a little rinse first because otherwise they're going to have, like, there's going to be a film on there.
I don't know.
Really?
I mean, sometimes they do if it's really bad.
I feel like you got a nice dishwasher.
It is a really nice... One time my dad said, hey, you don't have to rinse. We got the nice one, so you don't have to rinse.
We got the nice one.
We got the nice one. No rinsing needed.
Good job, Dad.
Thanks,
good,
Dad.
Good job. Good job right there. All right, we got news, and we're going to do a Muhammad Ali tribute the final half hour on 720 WGN.
It's Ali Shuffle time. Ali Shuffle. Ali Shuffle. Hey. Hey. Ali Shuffle.
Jam.
Yeah, yeah. 720 WGN.
That could be featured on Nick D's Fly Jams Friday.
Mm-mm-mm. We played the Black Superman to start the show for Muhammad Ali. Now we're going a whole different feel. So, 74 years old, we want to do a little tribute. By the way, you can jump in here, 312-981-7200, as we talk about the greatest of all time, the champ. So we have some sound for you, some great interviews, and just Ali talking about different fun things in his life. But let's get a little Roy Leonard going on here. This is Muhammad Ali with Roy Leonard. It's about 2 minutes, and it's about Muhammad Ali staying humble. So let's am I jumping the gun here, Dan? You look like you're searching.
I'm still not sure if we could say that nickname on the air, so I'm just not going to do it.
Okay,
we could stick with Downtown if you want.
Downtown Danny Long.
There we go. Downtown Danny Long.
All right, so here is Muhammad Ali with Roy Leonard on Staying Humble.
Mary, did you have a question for the champ?
Oh, hi. Yeah, hi, Roy. Hi, Muhammad.
Well, how are you?
Oh, I love you.
Oh, I love you, too. I hope my wife don't hear you.
Listen, I really do. And I, you know something? I would never watch a fight unless you were doing it. Because
ain't
I
you
hate,
nice?
I
Thank
just
you.
Absolutely hate boxing.
I love to hear that because this is the image I try to portray is the type that draw people who don't follow boxing, which makes an extraordinary crowd. And I'm glad to hear you say that.
I got a question for you, Muhammad. Now, I don't know if this is true or not, but you know what I see in you that maybe others don't?
Please don't tell everybody that. Because you messed my whole thing up.
All right, now, can I tell
you? Please don't tell me. What is it?
I see a certain shyness in you. And I wonder if I'm not right. If
you're
a lot
right.
of this
you're
that
right.
you put on is just what that is a put on. And basically, you're a very shy, humble person.
I'm a good actor, and you're telling the truth. I don't know about how humble I am, but I am shy.
I think so. I see that in you, Mohammed.
Mainly when I'm out on an airplane, on a nightclub, or at a party, and I see a real pretty lady, and I just don't know how to say hello.
But I see that in you, and I see a humility in you, too.
Well, you know, it's interesting that you bring this up, Mary. There's a Wilford Sheed is a fine English writer, and there have been a lot of books written about this guy, but I think Wilford wrote one of the best ones, I think, anyway.
That big picture book?
Yeah, right.
That was the worst.
You thought it was the worst?
That's what
we're going to have our first fight. Anyway, no, but Wilford said, no, he said in the book, he said, he is a humble man.
I can see it,
quote, right. Unquote. I'm interested that you didn't like that one.
No,
is it be, well, he never came to any conclusions. He just offered.
A lot of things in that book about the religion, about a lot of things. I didn't read it. My manager read it, and he told me it was the worst, the good, best pictures ever put out, but the worst book ever written. So many of them. Now, he may have said a few good things, like with the quote you just mentioned, but basically, it's a terrible book.
So you could already see him slurring his words
well, that
there.
That was in 1977. If I'm not mistaken.
77, yeah.
1977 with WGN Radio legend Roy Leonard. That full interview, by the way, is at WGNRadio.com.
Which is a great listen. Highly recommend it. We'll do one more with Roy, which let's just talk about times bringing change here, Dan, which very interesting. Like I was watching one thing with Muhammad online last
also,
night.
Also, real quick, did you hear the lady? You know, that's a Chicago. Yeah. Hey, Muhammad. Hey, Muhammad.
Muhammad, I love you. You're the best, Muhammad.
Muhammad.
All right, here's one more with Ali with Roy about times bringing change.
You mentioned that John Lennon once said to you that the bigger you get, the more unreality you have to face. I mean, you become more real, but the people around you become more unreal. Have you noticed a change in the way people, take the phone calls that we've had this morning. Are there changes in the way people react to you? Things that they say that are different, the general feeling of people.
Years ago, during the time of the draft, every other call would be a rough call, a hard question, people condemning you and getting on you. Time brings about change. People forget. People can't stay angry for so long. A plane crash today kills 500 people, and 4 or 5 days is old news. President Kennedy is dead, it's not on our minds. Martin Luther King is dead, it's not on our minds. People just forget. The Vietnam War, you used to hear every minute, Vietnam this, Vietnam that. You don't hear a thing about Vietnam no more. Watergate this, Watergate that, you don't hear a thing no more. So people can't stay mad for so long. News is old, news don't last for so long. I don't care how bad something is, wait 3 or 4 days and it's old news. So the questions that they asked in those days when controversy about the religion, about the change of name, about the Muslims, about the draft. You don't hear one thing about that no more because time brings about change. So you notice that as time goes on, things change and people change.
Well, and that sums up your point that you've made all day, Carm, that he had critics back in his heyday, a lot of them. A lot of people didn't like him. He was controversial. Now, the entire world is celebrating the life of Muhammad Ali, looking at him in a different way.
And what year was that interview again?
77.
So today, we sit there and say things. The news cycle moves so quick, and what's on Twitter one second is gone, and we forget about it, and we move on. He was saying that in 1977.
Right.
So maybe on some level, things aren't as different as we think they are today, just because with all social media. Even back then, it was news, and then it wasn't. I mean, that really hasn't changed. If you listen to what he's talking about right there, and I really never thought about it that way, but I'm not going to doubt what he's talking about at all.
Yeah, and he obviously has that really unique, one-of-a-kind, interesting vantage than the rest of us, being a international figure, whether it's social issues or just as an athlete. So to get that perspective is really interesting, and yeah, go back and listen to this whole interview with Roy Leonard. It's really interesting stuff in there from Muhammad, as the nice lady on the phone with Roy pronounced his name.
Let's get some fun cuts in here. This was Ali talking about how he's going to destroy Joe Frazier, which a lot of people didn't like him being so braggadocious, but here's the champ.
Joe's gonna come out smoking, and I ain't gonna be joking. I'll be pecking and a-poking, pouring water on his smoking. Then this might shock and amaze you, but I will destroy Joe Frazier.
That's so good. Just amazing. So good. How about, here's one about Sonny Liston being too ugly to be the champ. Said he listen, you're too ugly to be the champ. Hey, hold on one second here because system is imploding. Now we're back. Here we go. Listen, too ugly to be the champ.
I saw Sonny Liston a few days ago, Cash.
Ain't he ugly? He's too ugly to be the world champ. The world champ should be pretty like me.
Well, he told me to bet my life that you wouldn't go three rounds.
Well, if you want to lose your money, then bet on Sonny.
May I ask you this?
Because I'll never lose a fight. It's impossible. Tell him. It's impossible.
Never lost a fight in your life.
Ask any of my fans when was the last time they lost. I'm too fast.
Champion from the crib.
I'm the king. Born the champ.
Born the champ from the crib.
Ah! Unbelievable.
I need more Ali in myself.
You do?
Yes.
You want that swagger? You want that confidence and the charm?
I mean, I feel like it's just not okay to throw the swag out there when I walk onto the tennis court with a huge match. By the way, I lost again this morning after last night.
I was going to say, you can't say I'll never lose because Joaquin took you down yesterday in your club championship.
Yeah, and this morning I played a 6'7"
just
Ivan Isevich
power moves all over the court,
and the guy was standing at the net. I'm like, oh my, this is an issue. And he was a coach at New Trier, and he's got the garb on and the whole thing. And I was calling him Terry, and it's like he goes to me, it's Kerry, like the president, or the runner up. I'm like, okay, Kerry, and then Kerry took me down today. But if I was giving them my Ali swag out there, maybe I could have intimidated Kerry.
Right, next time, just go in there hot and just start trash talking everybody.
Right.
See what happens.
Right. Let's talk Rumble in the Jungle. Two more here, real quick. Rumble in the Jungle. This was one of the greatest boxing matches of all time. Ali, the Rumble in the Jungle.
This man is going to whoop George Foreman, and I'm going to whoop him of all places in Africa, in the Congo, where the Lumumba boys are.
I'll fight in your home territory. You couldn't be any happier the way this is coming up in September.
Why would you call Africa my home territory?
You've been telling me that for 10 years.
That's right, and if you come over there talking like that, we'll cook you.
That's
so good.
And George Foreman, one of his quotes, I'm not going to call him the greatest fighter of all time, but I'll call him the greatest human being of all time. And last one, back to Sonny Liston, I'm going to beat him like I'm his daddy.
See that barrel in the street? I beat him before the fight.
You'd actually take him on before the fight?
Beat him like I'm his daddy. I make this prediction. This will be the biggest upset in all fighting history, and this will be the easiest fight of my life. The ball is training harder for this fight than any fight.
And then he comes out and does it.
At least we have these clips and video footage that we'll be able to hang on to forever and watch forever. YouTube, check out Muhammad Ali. There's some awesome stuff on there and all over social media. Everybody's been posting stuff all day.
720 WGN 312-981-7200. Any thoughts on the champ? We got a couple more minutes to go. We're also going to bring in Amy Guth to get you ready for her show. Final timeout, 720 WGN. WGN, busy day. Had a ton of guests on today. Mike Farron, pre and post from the Diamondbacks. Ira Burkow, former of the New York Times, wrote a boxing book, a lot of it featuring Muhammad Ali. That was outstanding. We'll have a podcast of Ira up for you as well after the show if you missed it.
Rick Tellender.
Who else we got on there?
Craig Sager.
Yes,
your
sir.
Phenomenal one-on-one. That's already on the website, correct?
It is.
It is. Adam Hoge, who I am sitting in for today, as he filled us in on his move today.
Hoge with the move.
Hoge with the move. Passan. You got a Jeff Passan in there.
Big day on the show. Jeff Passan. The book is The Arm.
As Steve Cochran would say, get two, you're careless, you'll lose one.
That's a good point. You have a lot of books left in the Steve Cochran office that you acquired, Kevin Powell.
when Mike Jacobson, former producer of The Beat,
mm-hmm.
Jacobson, current producer of the Steve Cochran Show, when he was...
No one has ever launched their career from The Beat the way Jacobson has all the way to mornings.
Yeah, right.
That was an incredible accomplishment.
Yeah, as we were all sort of jockeying and moving some things around at the station, we basically flipped desk. I moved to the sports office. He went to Cochran's office. And he's apparently a neat freak. And we have so much, just so much stuff in that office. And he spent like the first week cleaning it out and like putting the books out on the free table upstairs. And everyone was taking it. So thanks for cleaning the office, Jacobson.
Did Steve appreciate the cleanliness? Do we know?
I believe so. Because Steve would get sent so many books. You know, like every day it'd be multiple books, people trying to get on the air.
I mean, I remember Steve's office from back in the old days when Rick O'Connor was producing him. And
yeah,
it was
not here for that.
Yeah, it was a small corner office, and you walked in there and, like, books fell on your head. I mean, that was basically what went on in there.
Yeah, it's probably good Mike's in there to bring some. And Mary Sandberg, of course, the producer. Mary and Mike, the producers of the morning show, do a great job. It's probably a good thing they're in there because when it was basically Steve and I and Ross, his son, and it got a little unorganized at times. So it's good to have a neat freak in there and a female presence.
Who was the most organized between you, Ross, and Steve? I'm going to guess Ross.
Yeah, Ross.
All day.
Then me, then maybe Cochran. Which isn't saying much if I'm the second most organized.
There's some form of accomplishment there. There's one text about a Muhammad Ali I want to read. It's from D630. My brother shook hands with Muhammad Ali, and he said Ali had the biggest hands he ever saw. My brother served 3 tours in Vietnam. He died from Agent Orange cancer. Thank you to your brother and your family for the service, and I'm assuming the Muhammad Ali love as well. So the big story today, baseball-wise, the White Sox have a new pitcher in James Shields. Cubs win again, and the Sox lose again as they go down 7-4. The road trip ends tomorrow, and the Cubs' homestand comes to an end tomorrow. Jake Arrieta on the mound out at Wrigley. You're going to be there tomorrow for the wrap-up.
I will be there, absolutely. And yes, Cubs continue to roll. They're 39-15. Meanwhile, the White Sox, after that dominant first month, really, are just 2 games over 500? Is that right? 29-27?
A rapid decline.
Rapid decline. James Shields will help shore up the rotation, but they need offensive help. They need bullpen help. They need probably another starter. So, the wonderful Amy Guth has stepped into the arena.
She has. She's looking for some headphones, which, Amy, I used those earlier. They didn't work particularly well. I hope they work better for you. Maybe you'll have the women's
touch. I've had one ear working the entire show. That's just what I'm all about, Carm. I battled through for you. I was able to do an entire show with just one ear in the headphones working.
Which, the left or the right?
The left. It's true determination.
Well, I appreciate that.
I battled through for you.
I had my own headphones, and then I lost the adapter. That's going to have to be taken care of. Amy, how are you?
Hello. How's it going?
Your thoughts on Muhammad Ali? You have to have some form of love for the champ. Come on.
Yeah, I mean, he was an icon. I've been listening to your show this afternoon. It's really interesting. I mean, I thought that one caller that said was talking about dodging the draft repeatedly. He kept saying that.
Yeah, Jerry. Remember Jerry.
I mean, I thought I haven't heard that narrative. I mean, I've heard it, but I haven't heard it quite as passionately today. It seems like when somebody dies, you kind of, you know, cut them slack at some point because it's the end of their lives. And so you, even if they're, you know, if you didn't agree with everything they said, you still had to say, you know, step back and look at the body of work behind, you know, and say, like, look at all that he did and look at all the barriers that he broke, really. So he was, you know, very iconic and blazed a lot of trails.
Jerry didn't like that we were giving him the love. Like,
well, and as, obviously wasn't around for this, but reading about it and learning more about him through my whole life, it wasn't him. And the way the guy was saying it was completely attacking Ali. He wasn't cowarding from the war.
Well,
he was making a stance. He was taking a stand on the issue.
Also, here's kind of the problem, I think, with public discourse generally right now is it's very like black and white thinking.
Right, exactly.
Nobody.
It's extreme one way or the
other.
Yeah,
nobody can think critically about something and say, well, I really like him as a sportsman, but I didn't agree with this one thing.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, it's either it's one or the other. I mean, we're seeing that playing out right now in this election cycle, right? There's this, like, no one can take it issue by issue. They're like, this one thing happened. Blah!
Right.
You know,
right.
Convene
instead
a group.
Of,
let's go
yell.
Instead
of breaking things down and sort of analyzing and bringing perspective into things, everyone is hot take one way, hot take the other.
Yeah, it's all hot take. I mean, I think public discourse has completely just gone to hot take, hot take, hot take, which is not good. So
I thought Hillary had a better week this week.
Hillary had a better week.
Did she not? I mean, right?
She did.
Let's get some authentic talk going on, Hillary.
It was interesting to kind of see her finally firing a shot across the bow. You know, she's been pretty measured about it all, but. And in fact, when she said he's probably attacking someone on Twitter right now, he was, right?
Yeah.
He was doing that very thing. So, yeah, that was interesting to see those new developments and her kind of shifting her tone, knowing like, hey, I think it's business time. I need to kind of address this one.
This was the Donald Trump. I don't mean to bring politics in here with 3 minutes left in the show, but the tweets that are recirculating, this from Donald Trump last winter. He said, Obama said in his speech that Muslims are our sports heroes. What sport is he talking about and who? is Obama profiling, and then a tweet today, Muhammad Ali is dead at 74, a truly great champion and a wonderful guy. He will be missed.
Oh, that's nice of the Donald. What's on the Amy Guth Saturday Night Special?
You know what? This is going to be a really fun show. We are talking about learning things as an adult. So not necessarily like professional development, but fun things. Like when you challenge yourself to like, you know, I've always wanted to learn to play this instrument or speak this language or, you know, it's sometimes there's when you're out of the, you know, out of the habit of learning after you get out of school, it's a little bit harder to go back to it. That learning muscle kind of atrophies. So we're going to be talking about new skills and learning that kind of thing as an adult. So we're going to talk with someone in the first hour who pretty much has built a career and empire out of taking risks and challenging fear head on in a really interesting way. And then in the second hour, we're going to talk to a triathlon champion and coach, and also a wonderful musician from the Old Town School of Folk Music about learning skills, both, you know, physical ones and more, you know, mental and things that involve creativity and practice and things like that. So we're going to break it all down.
So you did get a guest for the running working out segment, because earlier Amy came in and asked for Karma and Mind's help, and we were worthless to her. We didn't really give her any help in that area.
Yeah, so you actually were zero help. No, I got an awesome guest, like an awesome, awesome guest. So I'm super excited.
Once I heard you had cast the net out wide, I knew you would be good. So I just felt like it would all work out.
Yeah, it always does.
And let me give a, as far as learning new things, and you mentioned fear, let me give a at the Carm suggestion. If you are fearful and then you are feeling the hesitation, that is a great sign that it's exactly what you should be doing. So
that's true. Look at my screensaver on my phone.
Punch fear in the face.
There you go. I love it.
Or embrace it. You know,
embrace it.
Give it. Hey, okay, I'm scared and I'm loving it. And you know,
I totally agree. I mean, I think fear is.
It's a great guider.
It's a great, great tool to guide you to what you need to address. And here's the thing that we spend so much time thinking about fear and like this one thing that's kind of controlling us. This one, any fear you have is controlling you. And it's the minute you step through it, it's gone. It's done.
The past year, Steve Cochran, who's been a stand-up comedian for basically his entire life, he brought me into that world. So he sort of kind of coached me along, and I did three or four of them. I've never been more scared in my entire life than the minutes leading up to my actual stand-up.
Yeah.
But when you're done, oh, my God, it is a rush.
I've done it one time,
so
and it was a great feeling.
Yeah. So it's embrace it.
First time jumping out of a plane, very scary. Next time you do it, maybe you'll, you know, it's like full enjoyment the whole ride up.
Have you jumped out of a plane?
No, I'm terrified. Oh. And I've allowed it to stop me. But maybe someday I won't, Amy, and I'll practice what I preach. There's other things that I'm scared of.
I really want to do the shark cage. I really want to do that. I think that would be really cool. It's hard to find someone to do that with. Not a lot of people are keen to that. But I have a friend, she said she'd do it.